We would like to welcome you to the September 11th meeting of the Savannah Historic District Board of Review. The purpose of this board is to promote the educational, cultural, economic, and general welfare of the city of Savannah. This board is appointed by City Council and is not affiliated with any for-profit or nonprofit organization. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards established in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are the basis for evaluating the compatibility of changes in new development. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, and impact on property values are not within the board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a certificate of appropriateness. Similarly, personal preference will not be the basis for any decision. Signpostings. Members of the board receive packages containing applications in the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were there any projects that were not posted this month? Hearing none, we will move into the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. We have four items on the consent agenda this month. Item number one, a petition of Hallett and Co. for 412 East Taylor Street alterations. Item number two, petition of Edward Perch Design and Planning for 514 East Oglethorpe Avenue. Petition number three, Signs of the South for 110 East President Street, non-illuminated and illuminated signs. And item number four, a petition of LS3P Savannah for 7 East Congress Street, an amendment to file number 24-002769COA. Is there any member of the public or a board member who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move 110 East President Street to the regular agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. There is a request to remove item number three to the regular agenda. I will entertain a motion to this regard.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Houle, second.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. I'll take a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Item number three is removed from the consent agenda and placed on the regular agenda. If your item was on the consent agenda and has not been moved, you are welcome to leave or stay as you like. On to the regular agenda or adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion for approval of the agenda as amended?
Houle, so moved.
Is there a second?
Higgins, second.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion to approve the agenda has been approved and is passed. Approval of minutes. Minutes from the previous meeting are attached to the agenda and were posted online. There was a note to correct item number 10, the vote. Is there a motion to approve the minutes as amended?
And it has been adjusted.
Okay, thank you, Bree. Is there a motion to approve the minutes? Thank you, Mr. Houle. Is there a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. I will do a voice vote on that. All those in favor, aye, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion to approve the minutes has been approved and is passed. Items requested to be removed from the final agenda. We do not have any this month. The continued agenda. Bear with me. Lost my place on my own agenda. We have two items on the continued agenda. Is there a motion to continue the items on this agenda?
Houle, so moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. All those in favor? Any opposed? The motion to approve the continued agenda has been approved and is passed. Requests for extension, we have none this month, so we will now move on to the regular agenda. Staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to recommendations. We ask that the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address the items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance or questions raised by this board. The public will then be given the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to the public comment. The board will then go into board discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairwoman. We will structure board discussion by going around to each board member two times for comment. You do not have to provide comments if you do not have any. If you are joining us virtually for the first time, please locate your control panel. Public that wishes to submit comment, use the raise your hand feature. I will be notified and will call on you by name. When you come up to the podium, please submit your name for the record, and then you may comment. And we ask that you keep your comments to 3 minutes or less. The first item up on the regular agenda is item number 3, petition of signs of the self, Deborah Bowen, file number 24-004393, 110 East President Street, for non-illuminated and illuminated signs.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting the project. Let me just get this up real quick. All right. The applicant is requesting approval to install one non-illuminated wall sign and one illuminated wall sign on two different elevations of the property located at 110 East President Street. This is existing conditions, proposed locations, and then a mock-up of what the signs would look like. 110 East President Street was built in 1924 and is a contributing resource. It originally served as the district headquarters for the Standard Oil Company and is reported to be the first gas station in Savannah to incorporate the drive-through gas pumps into the design of the building instead of under an attached canopy. The building has been home to several businesses over the years, most recently Cadence Bank and the Samet Corporation. Staff did find that these standards for both signs were met in a building that has multiple businesses with different entries. They are allowed to have signs for each business and on different elevations. So we had found those to be met. And in that case, we were recommending approval to install one wall sign on the Drayton Street elevation and one illuminated wall sign on the President Street elevation as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. Thank you.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff?
Yes, Caitlin, can you flip back to the Drayton Street elevation?
Yes.
As it exists? The, for lack of a better term, the squiggles, are those remaining construction adhesive from the past sign?
That was our understanding.
And are they proposing to put up the new sign with additional construction adhesive?
Yes. We had talked when we met on site with them to look at this project that this should be removed and cleaned up prior to installation of anything else.
But if they put it up the new sign with additional construction adhesive, isn't it going to cause similar damage onto the porous stone?
Yes.
So I guess I'm having problems understanding staff recommending approval for something that's going to cause further damage.
Well, in our understanding of it was that the adhesive could be removed without causing damage and that to making it thereby reversible and using that standard of it being reversible. Again, not necessarily that it's damaging it permanently. But one thing we can certainly do is check with the applicants and if we wanted to add a condition that they install it differently, we can certainly entertain that if y'all would prefer.
That was actually my next question is, does staff have any alternative suggestions for attachment of a sign?
Not at this time.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there additional questions?
Can I follow up with those questions? Because
Just state your name, Mr. Houle.
Oh, I'm sorry. Stan Houle. Can you roll to the next picture that's the corner? Okay. Well, one more. Yes. That the existing signage is one sign on the side. And then I think the proposal was for in the little pink box that the proposed sign would go there. I wonder if when the, and I can't read what the name of the company is.
It's the Cadence Bank.
Cadence Bank. Did they have a discussion about putting a sign over the old standard?
It's two different companies. So the building has multiple tenants.
Yes, but I was thinking that the process would be the same to get the Cadence sign as it would be for the other sign. So maybe that could be a workable solution.
I think there was a different company, though, that had their sign over top of that than the bank. It was another construction company, I believe, and it had been up there for several years. I couldn't find a COA for that one. I think it had been quite some time ago.
Yeah, I think the question, you know, as it refers to the application that's in front of us now is, you know, staff's recommendation on the least intrusive way to affix a sign to the building. And if it's construction adhesive, making sure that whatever method is chosen does not damage the historic fabric of the building.
Well, I believe that the petitioner is in attendance online if it would be beneficial to ask them what other methods they might have available.
Are there any additional questions for Caitlin before we?
I do. I have a question, Caitlin, and maybe this is for the petitioner, but can you clarify in terms of the illumination of both signs?
Only one. The square one above the Cadence Bank sign right here would be illuminated. This one would not be.
Okay. Thank you.
Caitlin, did the petitioner discuss with you or demonstrate any hardship if they were not granted the signage, the non-illuminated signage, since they are putting up another illuminated sign?
We had not discussed hardship, aside from the fact that one thing they really wanted to make sure of was that they could kind of advertise the business on two different elevations of the building, but not necessarily from any hardship perspective.
Right. And under the ordinance, that a business is allowed to have signage
Correct.
On multiple facades. Mm-hmm. Correct. Okay. Additional questions for Caitlin before we speak to the petitioner? Thank you, Caitlin. I understand the petitioner is with us online. The petitioner is not with us.
Becky Slack.
From Deborah Bowen.
Oh, yes.
I don't see her name on the list.
Okay.
That's unfortunate.
Well, I guess since we don't have the petitioner, is there a member of the public that wishes to comment? Okay. At this time, we'll enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. I will go around to each board member two times. Ms. Nagel, I'll start with you.
I do wish the petitioner had been here, but I guess that's not the case, so I don't have any further comment.
Thank you. Mr. Higgins?
I think this may be a case where we want to continue it, so that the petitioner can address concerns about the seemingly damage to the stone, and if there are alternative means of attaching the signage.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Houle?
I would agree with a continuance to allow the petitioner to respond to some of the issues we've got.
Mr. Thompson?
It's been my tradition that the applicant isn't here, then we continue it to when the applicant can be here. I looked up the company online, and it's not just a one outfit company, a lot of people, a lot of offices. So they certainly can send somebody here to speak to us about their plans.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. I think that, you know, two options, just to throw out an alternative. I think that, you know, for me, I would be okay with them working with staff to determine the best way to affix the sign to the building. But if you think there are issues beyond that, I think a continuance would be warranted. But I think that's up to my fellow board members to decide. But two options. And Ms. Nagel, I'll go back around to you.
I would support continuing.
Mr. Higgins.
I just want to go on the record of I'm extremely uneasy with this sign because of the past damage that's been caused to this building. It's very significant facade. I question, while yes, they are allowed multiple signs on this building because it fronts on different streets, but when it causes what seems to be permanent damage to an historic structure, to something that is so significant, I have grave concerns. So, yes, I still support the continuance.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Houle?
Comments?
Mr. Thompson?
Or continuance.
Okay.
I think but the petitioner is just signing in right now. I don't know if that's something, or do we just move forward as planned?
I would just say, since the petitioner is here, and I know she's incredibly knowledgeable about signage, mm-hmm. I think it would make sense to let her talk to you all and answer any questions you may have.
Okay. I will grant the petitioner permission to speak.
Good afternoon. I'm Deborah Bowen, President and CEO of Savannah, Signs of Savannah. Excuse me, Signs of the South. I think there's some questions about what kind of glue I'm using on the sign for, it's 110 President Street. That's the old Standard Oil building.
Yes, ma'am.
And I'd be delighted to help you with any questions you have. I think it's about the adhesive right now. And I've got pictures too. And we plan to use a glue that we've used before, PL530 Loctite adhesive. It works on wood, concrete, stone. And the sign is approximately 40 pounds. So we have to have a good lock on that to make sure it doesn't fall down. And we're also trying to use all the other restrictions and recommendations that have been recommended to us by the MPC. So we can get that glue off. Now, I don't know if you have pictures. I don't know if anything's happened with the glue that is on that side of the building on Drayton Street, which is where we'd like to put in the sign. But there's a lot of glue up there already. I did not do that. That was another sign company, and it was when it was taken down, the glue was not removed as good as it could have been, I think. But that was before me or my sign company. This can be removed with a heat gun, a number of ways it can be removed if it needs to be.
And Ms. Bowen, in your experience, sorry, right here.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. And your experience with the construction of adhesive, I think you said it was PL350?
Yes, PL530.
530.
My mistake.
Sometimes it's my own dyslexia, but in your experience, have you successfully removed that from historic material or porous stone, such as the building that's in question?
I have not, but I've used Loctane on many other buildings, and we have had to remove. We didn't know most of the time. We don't know what kind of glue is up there. We just don't know what it is. Other sign companies have done it, and there's no way we know. And so, no, I have not.
Okay.
Historic building. I grew up in downtown Savannah and appreciate very much the MPC and trying to maintain the dignity and the preservation of the entire historic district and many other districts in Savannah.
Thank you for that. Are there other questions for our applicant?
So just to clarify, the PL 530, you have not tried to remove it from stone previously?
I don't think so. I have not. The problem is the weight, you know, we're trying to do everything we can to put a sign up for a construction company that has bought the building. And, you know, being that it's, I think it's, what did I say, 40 pounds, that's not an incredible sign, but it's the lightest we can make it for visibility and also the duration and of that sign. They need to have that.
Have you pursued other means of affixing the sign that would not cause damage to the historic fabric of that building?
I don't think this would in the end, but we pursued everything imaginable on that building. I have been working on this building since January. I have spent an untold amount of time on this building and met with quite a few of you in here. So, I've done about all I know to do.
Yeah, I think I would offer a suggestion since the board's inclination prior to hearing your testimony today was to continue this. And perhaps you can test the adhesive, apply it and remove it and make sure that there's a way to remove it without damaging the building on a smaller stone sample and present those findings to this board. And that might give them a little bit more comfort.
I'd be happy to do anything, but I will tell you it's a very, very well-known company that makes glue. I'm sure you've probably all used it at one point or another. And it is, if they say it can be removed with a heat gun, I'm sure it can with anything because these are the, you can look up the rules and regs on it and that's what they recommend.
If you were to put up the sign with this Loctite.
Right.
To get the sign down, I know the glue can be removed with a heat gun, but to get the sign down, would you not have to pull the sign off or scrape it off somehow?
I'd have to pull the sign off, and then we'd have to use heat guns or whatever else. I think they recommend about three things. I didn't realize I was going to be here today exactly, so I don't have thoroughly all my notes in order, but they recommended two or three products actually to get the glue off. The one I think would be less, and I'm very concerned about preservation of especially of downtown. I grew up on Hall Street, and I would be especially concerned about it. I am concerned.
Thank you. Are there additional questions for staff?
I have a question. Staff was commenting that one of the recommendations would be to have all that existing glue that was prior to you taken off before adding more glue onto all of that other glue. Is that something that you or the owner of the building are willing to do as part of the COA?
I would not be willing to do that. It'd be interesting to know who put it up. And actually, the sign was taken down somehow. And all of a sudden, I was by that building and the sign was down. I do not know how. We thought we were going to be covering up an existing sign that was for, I can't remember the company, somebody. Help me, I can't remember. But it was a company that I think was some sort of building. I don't know what. But it was a nice polymetal that we're going to have to put back up there again because I don't want to touch those letters. I can't put anything into the building, of course. And so we're trying to do everything we can in the mortars of the building, which sometimes is very difficult, too, because if you don't want to have any leakage problems and whatever else. So I understand all that. But that was the best solution. And believe me, it has been a long time in coming.
I just didn't know if that was something that had been discussed as a possibility as part of a condition was to remove all the existing glue before new glue gets added on, because you could add new glue and then
that glue doesn't come off, but you can always say, well, it was the other glue. And
I understand.
It would be worth putting there as a condition. But I wanted to know if you or the owner of the building had thought about that.
I think it was Lot Barber that was there, I think. And that was a long time ago. And the sign stayed up for a long time. I think it was quite a bit of time after they left and whatever. So I do not.
Ms. Bowen. I think if there are, it doesn't seem like we're getting the information required to make a vote today. So if the stance is going to be to continue, I think that we should move along. I would entertain a motion. Yes, sir. Thank you, Ms. Bowen.
Thank you. We appreciate your help.
At this time, I'll entertain a motion.
Okay, Higgins. Let me get back to the petition number. I move the Historic District Board of Review with regard to 110 East President Street, 24-004393, continue this to the October, what would the date be? October 9th meeting, so that staff can work with the petitioner to determine alternate means of attachment and repair of the stonework.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. The motion on the floor is to continue the petition to the October 9th meeting to allow staff to work with the applicant. Is there a second?
Nagel, second.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. I will now go around and call for a vote. Ms. Nagel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That petition is continued to the October 9th meeting. Next up on the regular agenda is item number 9, petition of LS3P Savannah, Michael Garcia, file number 24-002767 for 200 East St. Julian Street.
Thank you. As you all know by now, I'm a fan of Street View. So I think we're all very familiar with the site, 200 East St. Julian Street, otherwise known as kind of the Hunter McLean Building. This was a former, I believe, government office building that has been used as a commercial office building now for a number of years. It's an unusual site in that it has frontage on four streets. It takes up an entire trust lot. It is a non-contributing building within the Savannah Downtown Historic District. You all saw this application before, and the applicant has returned with some changes that I'm going to walk you through. I'm just going around the building. As you can see here, it doesn't really have a rear, which is one of the challenges. The applicant is fortunate to have a very talented design team. We've met with the project architect a number of times, gone over the proposed design, and we think there has been considerable progress repositioning a office building or any repositioning any type of building. Adaptive reuse is something that we encourage. It's environmentally friendly. But there are inherent challenges when you're trying to do that. And so we're just going to walk through a little bit of that today. We are recommending that this be continued. However, if you all feel some of the items that we have in the staff report can be worked out with staff, you know, this may be something that could be continued. I mean, excuse me, approved today. So I'm going to just go through. We seem to be having some, maybe it's just my eyes. It looks a little blurry. Anyway, I'm going to go pull up my staff report this way. All right. So this was before you, I believe, in June of this year, and you all continued this request. You asked the petitioner to look at three items. Further study how the design of the building could be refined to strengthen the visual compatibility of the building by looking at the fenestration, design details, material palette, and in particular, the north elevation along East Bryan Street, which, as I noted, is kind of the back of the building, but it's a challenge again for this site because there really isn't a back. It's on four streets. The applicant has provided revisions to all four elevations, and we're going to go through all those in a minute. In addition, you asked that the applicant provide details on the proposed exterior lighting. Those are not included, but I know the project architect can talk about what their ideas are in terms of lighting. You also requested the third item from your June meeting was to provide details on any proposed screening of rooftop mechanical equipment. As the architect will note, they've done some studies. It is their belief that the rooftop mechanical equipment will not be visible. So there, and he can correct me if I'm misspeaking, there is no proposed screening in the revised submission. But that's something that I'll go into in a minute a little bit further. So I hope this was helpful, and we thank the applicant for including this. And you can see on the top, and for the members of the public, this is the original submission on the top. This is the front, the front elevation, the south elevation on East St. Julian Street. I'm going to let the applicant, he could do a far better job than I can do of articulating this. But you can see there have been a number of important changes made. In particular, one of the concerns that was raised by you all and also by staff was the need to strengthen the base of the building. And as you can see, you now have a two-story expression at the base. There have also been alterations to the center bay to strengthen that, as well as alterations to the cornice line and a host of other alterations. So this is the elevation again on the front, south elevation, that you saw last month, in June, I should say. And then this is the revision here below. And then just walking you around the building. This is, again, another front facing the square. This is the west elevation, again, on top, what you saw a few months ago. And then the revisions below. Staff does feel that the applicant has done a commendable job of strengthening, you know, even though this building, the main entrance is not facing the square, early on and the applicant recognized this, we noted the importance of it addressing the square. And we do think there has been considerable progress here, again, strengthening the base, but then also additional changes here in terms of the fenestration. One of the challenges before that we had raised was the existing fenestration is not a technical term, but a little bit awkward. And so they went back and looked at it and came up with a new fenestration pattern that we feel is much more successful. Continuing around the building, this is the rear north elevation, which, as I noted, is on East Bryan and is challenging. There's a very narrow public sidewalk. There's no plantings. It is what it is. You can see the original submission at the top and then the proposed revision. We acknowledge that the applicant is facing a real challenge with this elevation. There are code requirements for the use, proposed use of this building. In terms of life safety, as well as just the functionality of it's going to be hospitality. Again, there have been notable changes to the bottom two floors to have that two-story exterior expression. Again, changes at the cornice line and some other changes that I'm going to let the project architect walk you through. I'd really like to note and thank we would like to thank the project architect. The side east elevation, which presently, and this is why I like Google Street View, I think most folks would say is a little bit awkward. It doesn't do a great job of addressing the street. And it's something that we talked about closely with the project architect. And as you can see, this was what was shown to you last time. It was going to retain that kind of awkward entrance, which almost looks like a back of house entrance. They've really done a commendable restudy of this elevation, again, starting at the top, looking at the cornice line. But then really that main change you can see right here is that the two-story, that they've introduced a two-story base. They put in a, they're proposing a canopy, alterations to the entrance to make it a more of a proper entrance, even though my understanding is this is not going to be a primary entrance into the building. We went through the history of the site the last time. It was before you. I won't go in through all of that before, but it is quite interesting. In terms of, I'm going to kind of cut to the chase because I know we have a long agenda. But one of the things we looked at, I know it's come up with you all, is the question of visual compatibility. And as you know, the ordinance says that a building has to be visually compatible with the contributing buildings to which it is visually related. And so we went out and looked at all the buildings around the square and adjacent streets. You can see here 18 Abercorn Street, 226 East Bryan Street, which is the little frame building where they're building the hotel adjacent to it. 32 Abercorn Street, which is directly to the south. We all know the theater. I'm sorry, that was 28 Abercorn, 32 Abercorn Street, Lucas Theater. And then, interesting enough, 31, 39 Abercorn Street, which, to be totally candid, I did not realize was a contributing building. And then we have the Planners Inn on the other side of the square, 29 Abercorn Street. And then a nice spot here, 27 Abercorn Street, and a great place to get a bite to eat, 23 Abercorn Street. And then 24 Drayton Street. And I know the applicant is going to walk you through all of this. In terms of the standards, the applicant has done a commendable job of meeting the standards, but there are some areas that staff feels could warrant some further study. And as I noted at the beginning of my presentation, while we are recommending that this be continued, should you all feel that these are things that can be worked out or during the discussion, you know, there may be a way to approve this. So I'm going to actually start from the back forward. The third condition is provide details on the proposed screening of rooftop mechanical equipment to ensure that the standards are met. We're always a little bit skeptical when people say you're not going to see mechanical equipment, particularly tall buildings in Savannah. You will likely see something from a distance. So we just want to make sure that the standards would be met. The second condition, which the applicant knows, these have all been shared with the applicant, obviously, beforehand, provide details on any proposed exterior lighting, which I know he will walk you through. But the meat and bones of what staff is recommending are in the first condition. Staff is recommending that the applicant look at further refinement and study to improve the visual compatibility of this building with the contributing buildings to which it is related. And there are four points here that I'll walk you through. The first one is fenestration. Study how the existing window openings could have more of a vertical nature to them as is found on the other contributing buildings. And one of the ways we've thought this could potentially be done is lowering the window openings. I'm going to go back to the street view. As you can see, some of these windows, the proportions are a little bit awkward. They're a little square. And so what we were saying was potentially lowering them. As I noted, the applicant has done that with some of the Juliet balconies. So we were thinking that can maybe can be done on a number of the other windows. One of the other things that came up when it was last before you was the existing building, as we all know, And again, I know the applicant has looked very closely at this. It's a very flat building, and that is one of the challenges with this building. And the applicant is going to walk you through how they've sought to address that. We are still recommending further study of how there could be additional visual depth, so you can get those shadow lines and how this could really be more compatible with some of the other buildings around the square. In terms of the material palette, all the proposed materials that the applicant is showing meet the standards. One thought we had, and this was just staff looking at this, again, we thought it could maybe help with the proportions, the floor heights. We know the floor heights can't be changed, but it's kind of a oddly squat building on some of the proportions. And part of that is reinforced by the fact that, as you can see here, on the lower portion of the building, before they added these two stories, there are these kind of bands of brick, a different colored brick. It's not a high quality brick. And so one of the recommendations was to potentially look at either painting the brick, which we've seen on other buildings, or applying stucco, or, you know, we're not going to design the building for the arc design team, but I know they have the capability to come up with something that could improve the visual compatibility. The real challenge, well, they're all challenges, but as I noted, the East Bryan Street elevation, that rear elevation, which is the north elevation, which has to service the back of the house, and also has to provide life and safety, as the project architect is going to walk you through. We are under no illusions that it is currently a wonderful elevation. It is not particularly friendly. Given the proximity to our office here, I've been by this building countless times. People don't walk on that side of the street primarily. They walk on the other side because it's not terribly friendly. We are recommending, while acknowledging that the applicant has done, I'm going to go back to the elevation drawings. They've done a deep dive into this, but further study about how this can potentially be strengthened in terms of the visual compatibility. And I'm sure the project architect has some thoughts about that, but I'm just going to go back to show you. And again, I do want to acknowledge that they have spent a lot of time looking at this. This was what you saw before, and this is what you see here. It is a vast improvement in terms of trying to make it look not like a back of a building, particularly with that two-story expression. There are also canopies above some of the doors. They've also made the doors not all just steel, you know, your utility doors. But it's, again, it's a challenge with this elevation. So we, again, want to acknowledge all the work that the applicant has done, and we're just recommending a little bit more work here.
Thank you, Jonathan. Are there questions for staff at this time?
This is cool. I did have one question, Jonathan. Can you scroll to the to the drawings?
The elevation drawings, sir?
Yes, the elevations.
Yes, of course.
There we go.
Which one would you like to look at?
That one is fine if you just scroll. My question is that there's an appearance that, and I'm using my terms, not yours, it appears from this one that it's, that the original looked like something that was going to be painted, like white, and then the below one is much darker color. Could you kind of go through what the colors are there?
Yeah, I don't believe, and the architect can correct me, I don't believe there was ever any intention on there. I think it may just be when we cut and pasted, it looks lighter. You know, sometimes things can come out. But my understanding was they were going to leave it the existing red brick, the two-tone brick, before. But it's a good point.
Was there anything else for staff?
Okay, thank you, Jonathan. Would the applicant please come forward and state your name for the record, please?
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Michael Garcia, representing 200 East St. Julian Street with LS3P Associates. Again, thank you to Jonathan and staff for all the times that we've met. I will say, to answer Mr. Hull's question, I think that's just a matter of them copying from the original drawing submission. It should be the same tone. Yeah. Before I get into some of the conditions and some changes that were amenable to providing, I did want to kind of just walk through some of the changes we'd made from the previous submission to now, just to make sure that everybody's on the same page, regarding the package.
Yeah, sure.
If I go there, gotcha. All right. Thank you. So I'll talk a little bit about the renders at some point, but I did want to go through some of the actual building details to show some major, in our mind, some major changes that we did go through in the second iteration process. We were fully on board understanding that the level of intensity of design at the original continuance was not up to par with the standards. Happy to have revised and gone through the second iteration. One of the big changes that we thought were important to implement was this understanding of creating a taller base for the building so that there was a better enhanced pedestrian experience. So our go-to kind of solution for this was, and we walked through this with staff at several points in our original, in the time between June and now. We went through and added about eight linear feet of stucco that would be above the existing openings for the second story windows. And one thing that we wanted to implement to add some further depth was the addition of a base cornice that would be made of stucco. The base cornice does project about a foot outward, and I can zoom into the building elevations to show you what that looks like. So yeah, you can see that's where the difference of printing came through. So we did implement a building cornice on the second floor that would have a playful interaction with the windows, with the window headers, projecting outward about a foot and 2 inches, with the windows, that we thought that would create a nice depth, on the second story above, going back into where the windows are located. Also I should note, one thing that we also wanted to play on was our primary focus in the original submission was just on the main entrances. This time we really wanted to ground the building with similar projections. So all of the pilasters on the first and second floor here that are expressed in gray, we have a detail for that shows that they're all projected an additional 4 inches away from the actual facade of the existing stucco. I can kind of show you what that looks like. So you can see here, this is the kind of enlarged elevation showing all of the materiality and kind of calling out all of the different elements. What we also wanted to do was remove the horizontality with the horizontal reveals happening within the existing stucco. So what we did was we kept them primarily only between the window bays, and then we would have infill where the pilasters would be located. In this detail, you can see we have approximately 7 inches of depth before you even hit the storefront on the ground floor. So that was something that we thought was enhancing the further depth on the pedestrian level. Another big distinguishing factor that we were looking at too in terms of projection for depth was the parapet cornice condition. I will be frank and admittedly say that our first one was sheepish. It had no sort of projection or any sort of detailing. So we did go back and try to look at a more custom profile. This is also looking at the style and time period of the building. You know, we were asked to reference closer comparisons to the church Emmaus house or the new Hilton that's going to be going across the street. Those are of a different time frame, and I know that they do reference one another, but for more mid-century, because this building was built in 1950, we thought something that was a little bit more sleek and took advantage of a little bit more curvature to enhance the depth would be helpful. So our current parapet, where our previous one was only a 6-inch depth away from the brick facade, our current parapet is sitting at 2 feet away from the overall brick exterior finish. So that's just, those are the major changes that we've made. And obviously looking at the articulation for the exterior of these pilaster expressions, we thought it was important to kind of note similar banding styles happening just to kind of accentuate that there was a sort of rhythm and aligning that to the windows. Going back to the art conditions, we did get the chance to meet with Jonathan and staff prior to this meeting to go through the conditions and just discuss what the reasoning was for some of these. And going back to our client, we are definitely amenable to looking at a painting of the brick. One thing that's really nice about now that we do have that as an option is we've always had internally, even within our design team, issues with this sort of like castle tiering that's existing with the existing stucco. Our worry was initially like if we're not painting the brick, removing that portion might lead to some sort of like shadowing of adhesive because all of that's form board and insulation. It's all over the existing brick finish as we've gotten some samples or we've done some testing for that. But with the painting of the brick, that does allow us to kind of simplify all of this tiering that's happening along Abercorn Street, along Reynolds Square, and then also along St. Julian Street. So this kind of tiered element that's existing above our second story, that has always been something that we haven't really wanted to touch, but being able to paint the brick does allow us to kind of go back in and hide some of these flaws and test the, and assess what the brick looks like underneath as well. I would also say that along Bryan Street facade, I know there were some questions regarding just compliancy with codes and life safety. According to the City of Savannah Traffic Engineering Review Plan, sidewalks that are a minimum of 5 feet are allowed to be egressed upon. So our two egress doors that are exiting onto Bryan Street, and I can show you that in floor plan. Those two doors do comply. We have no issue setting back, creating that opening and setting the doors back so that it's not an immediate egress onto the sidewalk. That's an easy fix for us. So essentially what that would look like is we would set this door and this door back in their openings. There, it's an existing 5-foot opening, so we do have the ability to use that for proper egress. Those two doors can be set back, and we are in the process with our internal team into looking at ways to minimize the number of doors that are needed for a trash room, pump room, and electric room. I do have to say, unfortunately, receiving does need to have an exterior door access because that's going to be where they're receiving most of their supplies. But through working with trash, with waste management here with the City of Savannah, it looks like we are going to be hiring a third-party group. So we won't be having a dumpster rollout or anything like that. So that door for trash could possibly be removed. And I will say that while the one disagreement that I have, and that's just in terms of, you know, visual compatibility is something that is subjective to the person that's reviewing this, right? I don't feel that the square openings for the windows are visually non-compatible. Emile's house on the ground floor has square window proportions. I can kind of show you what that looks like. So while the window openings are articulated a little bit differently, I think that's a different question versus what the window fenestration opening composition is. I'll also say that the building behind the pink house has all square openings going up and down their exterior elevations. The one concession that I will make regarding this is I do think that we are able to use the opportunity discussing window compatibility to all of the ground floor windows to do drop those sills down to the floor slab so that they're all floor-to-ceiling windows like some of the other ones that are being shown here. We were doing those primarily within the public areas to try to minimize visibility into the back-of-house spaces, but understanding that that's not within the purview of this board, dropping those windows is something that we are open to studying and looking at as well, along with the paint and removing of the stucco. I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Thank you, Mr. Garcia. Are there questions for the applicant, Mr. Thompson?
Just regarding that last comment, are you talking about the second floor windows?
I'm talking about the ground floor windows. So if you see, even along Bryan Street, some of the windows we left as the square openings.
I see. Yeah.
Okay. We can drop all of those down to match the side windows. Again, we were trying to differentiate between the public and back of house spaces, but at this point, I think it's something that is up for us to revise within the submission for sure.
Two other questions. One, I assume this building was built tied up to the right of way line all the way around, right?
Yes, sir.
Have you had discussions with the city traffic to see if you could do something to have more pedestrians sharing the street, particularly on the back, on the north, I guess the north side? Have you had those kind of conversations?
So we had those conversations regarding more particularly with what the Hilton was doing in terms of their valet drop-off, because we're sharing that same Bryan Street with where their valet drop-off is going to be located. We have not discussed expanding the sidewalk. Those are issues that GDOT would need to be involved in as well, the City of Savannah Department of Transportation would need to be involved in. Parking and mobility and traffic don't have purview over any sort of those expansions. We can offer them as suggestions, but that ultimately comes down to what they're looking for. But in terms of compliance for the street roads, I think they were not interested in that.
Well, my observation is that a foot or two could be taken from the roadway side, and also that your project should upgrade that sidewalk since it's practically flush with the road in the pictures. So,
as far as what in terms of our right of way and our civil drawings, we are looking to upgrade the sidewalks to the extent that they're at. We'd be happy to upgrade an additional foot or two into the street if that's a possibility.
I know that's not our purview, but I would suggest you do that.
Understood.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Other additional questions for the petitioner?
I did have a question, and again, might or might not affect the back of the house openings and all the doors, which is within our purview. But to consider the last time we had talked about the parking, have you talked to the city about that parking remaining? And I asked that question because even though parking is not within our purview, the openings of all the doors and the back of the house sanitation issue would bring that problem.
Are you referring to the parking along Bryan Street?
Yeah.
On the other side of our street?
On your side of the street.
Don't have any parking on East Bryan Street on our side of the street.
Okay. So the openings of your doors, do they still allow enough space on a sidewalk for, you know?
Like I said, any doors that are related to back of house, like a pump room, electric room, those would only be open in the event of needing to access those spaces.
So they're not regular?
They're not regular doors. We do have two egress doors that are in compliance along the Bryan Street facade. I did mention earlier that we are open to keeping the opening, but pushing a door, creating a new door that's a little bit further back so that it allows for the door to swing inside the property.
Okay.
That's definitely something that we're open to.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Higgins, just one quick question. So you're not doing any rooftop screening with no mechanicals?
So let me go to the perspectives. Again, I know, you know, I understand that there is a hesitancy to approve things like that, and we would be happy to provide rooftop screening details if needed. We've already been working with our MEP engineer, so all of the proper roof equipment, sizing-wise, all of that's already been laid into our model. And I can show you the perspectives again, and I've created a variety of perspectives to show not only the right-of-way, but also looking away a block or two from the property. This is on the corner of Abercorn and Bryan Street. So this is with the new enhanced parapet and cornice detail. No rooftop equipment is visible in this point. Looking over a block away towards where the parking deck is located, this is actually elevated from the roof from the right of way. No parking or no mechanical equipment is visible. I will say there is even an elevator control room there that's about 10 feet tall, and that's not even visible in our 3D perspectives. You can see it in our 2D elevations, obviously, but, and then this is again on Lincoln Street, looking towards our property about a block away. No rooftop equipment is visible at this point either. Regarding the lighting details, sorry, I forgot to touch on that. We hadn't changed our lighting spec, so it's my bad that I didn't include that in our submission, but it's the same lighting spec that you guys had reviewed the last time we sat.
Additional questions?
Yeah, one last question.
Yes.
There seems to be a lot of moving pieces, not as many as the first time, but it's still a lot of moving pieces. If we decided
to continue this. Do you think these issues, we're looking at the time frame, if we decided to continue it, do you think these could be resolved by October, or would it take November?
So as you know, if we're continued, if you want to be in the October meeting, we have about a week's time to make these changes. Given the last time, I will be frank, the last time I don't think the continuance provided enough guidance. So we did have to meet with staff various amounts of times just to understand what compatible elements we were looking at in terms of adhering to the ordinance and making sure that we were meeting the criteria. If the board is willing to provide conditions on specific items within the conditions list that they are looking for us to implement to seek approval, I think we would be able to get this done in time by for the October meeting.
In your opinion, Mr. Garcia, between the staff recommendations and what you've heard today, do you have enough information, or do you have points that you would like clarified before?
I would like clarified. I mean, like I said, with the windows, I think on our design team, I think we're pretty staunch in the agreement that square fenestrations are compatible. I understand the building appears squatty, but I have to be frank, I don't think increasing those window openings is going to make that appearance change much. I think if anything, it's just going to make more glass apparent, but the building will forever be perceived that way. I think different changes that we did to the ground floor certainly helped to elevate the height appearance of the building from a pedestrian perspective. So like staff had mentioned earlier, if there's any specific items that you guys wish to see as particularly studied within the next submission within the next week, then I feel like we would have enough to move forward, but that's ultimately up to you guys.
Thank you. We will do our best to address that in board discussion, and certainly appreciate your willingness to work with staff and also come before this body. Are there additional questions for Mr. Garcia? Mr. Thompson?
No, they're right away. You have cornices or projections now they didn't have before,
mm-hmm.
and you'll be into the city right away, or at least airspace. That's been reviewed by the city and okayed, or that to be?
Yeah, we did a current life safety review to make sure that the cornice steps were within the 2-foot maximum that you're allowed on all sides.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Anything else for Mr. Garcia? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Just state your name for the record.
Kelly Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC appreciates the architect meeting with HSF staff regarding this project. However, our ARC recognizes that the design has come a long way since the original submission. Our ARC agrees with the MPC staff that a continuance with a final review coming back to the board we think would be the best course of action. Our ARC would like to point out, however, that we don't agree with one of staff's recommendations, which is the painting of the masonry. That's all I have.
Thank you. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? Do we have anyone online?
No, ma'am.
Thank you. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be accepted. Mr. Thompson, I will start with you.
Well, given what we heard from the architect and what appears to be willingness to work with staff further on this, I support a recommendation to approve this with staff's making sure all the items have been addressed. But
okay. Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Hull?
I would be in favor of a continuance. That after the dust is settled, that it comes back to us. And especially looking at that we've got a few people missing here, maybe give them an extra opportunity to at least see what's going on.
Sure. And were there specific items of concern that you felt like you needed more clarification or further review? Okay. Mr. Higgins?
I echo what Mr. Cool set just said. I support a continuance to literally get the dust to settle on this.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel.
I agree with Mr. Thompson. I think we've heard this one multiple times now. I think we have a lot of details. I think the petitioner came back with a lot of answers to questions we had last time. I don't personally feel that I have any other questions that need to be addressed to request a continuance. I think that it's all there. with reference to the windows, I would agree with staff recommendations, but I don't agree that the windows would cause visual incompatibility. I think he did a good job at proving that plenty of other buildings around have those squares. Also, this is not a new build. It's not new construction buildings. It's already there. You know, they could just leave it as is, and we still might not like it, but it's there. So because it's not new construction, I don't think we need to go into the square windows being changed. I just don't see that's fair because the building's already there. So I would support approval.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. I will go around one more time. Mr. Thompson.
I'm in favor of moving it with staff review for the final design.
Mr. Hull.
No further comments.
Mr. Higgins.
No further comment.
Ms. Nagel.
No further comment.
Okay, at this time, I will entertain a motion.
Higgins. I move the Savannah Historic District Board of Review with regard to 200 East St. Julian Street, file 24-002767. Continue this for a period not to exceed 90 days so that the staff conditions can be addressed.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. The motion on the floor is to continue to allow the applicant to address staff concerns. Is there a second?
Hull, second.
Mr. Hull with a second. Mr. Thompson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Hull?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Nay.
I will vote to break the tie, and I am a nay, so that motion fails. I'll entertain a new motion.
Nagel, I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition number. Give me a second here. I lost my petition number. Is it 24-002767-COA? Provided that the conditions outlined in the staff recommendation are met, excluding the recommendation on the window change.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. The motion on the floor is to approve with the recommended staff conditions, with the exception of the shape of the window. Do I have a second?
Second. So Thompson, second.
We have a second from Mr. Thompson. Mr. Thompson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Hull.
Nay.
Mr. Higgins.
Nay.
Ms. Nagel.
Aye.
And I will vote again to break the tie, and I'm aye. The ayes have it. The motion is approved. Moving on to the next item on the agenda, it is the petition of LS3P Savannah, Michael Garcia, file number 24-003354 for 123 West Oglethorpe, rehab and addition.
Excuse me. Thank you. All right. So, bear with me as I... So this is another returning application, same design team. I think we're all familiar with the site. Just so the public understands, I mentioned this during the pre-meeting. You may have noticed that the windows have been temporarily boarded up. That was something that we approved on the staff level. It was done for a security reason. My understanding was some people had been moved in to the building. The building obviously needs to be secured, and obviously our challenge, our charge here is to preserve the historic building. So the building, if you walk by and you wonder why there are boards on the windows, that was something related to a security issue. So let's get right into it here. Here we go. So you all last saw this, I believe, at the July meeting. This was another project that was continued. The main point was that a number of you expressed concern that the design was not visually compatible. I believe some of the terms were that it was institutional and just didn't really fit in. Since that time, the architect has met with us, I believe met with other stakeholders in Savannah, downtown, and returned with a revised plan. I'm going to let Michael, the project architect, walk you through all this, but I'm just going to go through it quickly myself. And again, we really appreciate these kind of original and then the proposed. So on the top again, this is the north elevation facing Oglethorpe. As you probably all recall, this house was actually moved across the street to the south. It sits on a new foundation, federal style. When this was last before you, you may recall they were proposing the only really prominent change to the front elevation of the historic building was adding a canopy that is no longer being proposed, which was something that staff recommended they look at. But in terms of what will be seen, this in a flat elevation, it always looks like it's right up there with it, as the project architect will walk you through in a few moments. This is actually set way back behind the historic building, and there is a side garden here. But as you can see, there have been a number of changes both to the proposed material as well as to the fenestration. Probably the most prominent change, I think we talked about this the last time. The reason this building is so visible is that it's surrounded by a kind of interesting urban environment, lots of parking lots. And so you can see it from many different directions. I don't want to speak for the owner, the applicant. I believe at the last meeting they had indicated they were having some discussions with the owner of this corner lot about potentially acquiring that, which would obviously change the view. But then there's another parking lot here directly to the south. So you can see a lot of this building, and I know that was the concern that was raised. Another of the applicants, just walk you down the lane. We'd gone through a pretty extensive review in our prior staff report about we were in support of the design that you saw the first time in terms of visual compatibility. This lane is a little bit different than your what we think of as your kind of traditional lane in Savannah. There are large scale buildings that come right back to the lane. It's not carriage houses, so the context is a little bit different. But as you can see here, the applicant has really taken a deep dive into working on the visual compatibility. Again, this is the rear south elevation that you saw before, and below it is a proposed rear elevation. There have been notable changes to the fenestration, the materiality, the overall pattern, architectural composition to, again, have it be more visually compatible with the contributing buildings to which it is related. Again, there's going to be a hyphen piece. This is a historic building. Then you have kind of a hyphen piece, and then you have the main block that would be added. This is, again, on the top, what you saw the last time. This is the side east elevation that is not going to be terribly visible, given that there's a building, large building directly to the east. But the applicant has further refined and added some details, changing the fenestration. Again, in our view, strengthening the idea of kind of a hyphen and a transitional piece from the historic building to the new construction. And then this is the side west elevation, which, as I noted, you can see prominently now. Hopefully someday there will be a building constructed on this corner so as to bring back kind of the urban fabric in this area of the city. But right now you can obviously see it, and we have to go on what the existing conditions are. So again, this was the elevation that you saw before. And then below that is the revised elevation. One of the comments that you all had made the last time was you were concerned over the lack of fenestration on this elevation. So the applicant went back and took a hard look at that and added a number of windows, which we felt was very responsive to your comments. I'm not going to go through the context. We've gone through it before. We had some photos of when the building was moved. It's kind of an interesting story. It's wonderful that it was saved. But again, just wanted to quickly talk about the visual compatibility. You can see here again what I was showing you, that the lane is a little bit different than a lot of the other lanes. There are a number of large buildings. A lot of them are institutional buildings related to the churches in the area. There's the Telfair Museum, which is obviously to the north across Oglethorpe. And then there's one of the finest historic houses, which has some wonderful architectural details and different materials. And so, again, staff had been supportive of the original design. In terms of the Secretary of the Interior standards, I would want to note that, again, all of those are, in our view, met. And in terms of the recommendation, we are recommending approval of this proposed addition and alterations to the property located at 123 West Oglethorpe Avenue. We only have one condition, because in our analysis, the work is visually compatible, meets the standards. We made the applicant aware of this. Confirming the proposed scope of any exterior lighting. It looks like the only exterior lighting shown is the sconce above the historic building on Oglethorpe. But I may be misremembering, but I thought the architect had said there was going to be some other exterior lighting. But overall, again, we feel the applicant has really been responsive to your comments, and we look forward to him walking you through the plans better than I could.
Thank you, Jonathan. Are there questions for staff? Mr. Thompson.
This is completely off the wall, as all my comments typically are. That little building in the parking lot, is that historic money designated as historic money means? I know there was one like that in the Cultural Arts Center area.
Sorry, this building?
Yeah.
No.
No,
sorry.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
I do have a question. Nagel. That's one lot, right? It is one pin, one lot. Or is it two different separate lots, Jonathan?
The lot, I'm sorry, you're not talking about the parking lot?
No, where the addition's going. I'm sorry. Is that a separate lot or is that the same lot as the existing building?
It's the same lot.
So I'm having a hard time understanding how, and I wasn't here for the July meeting, so I apologize, but how does a building that surpasses Carriage House mass and height get approved or potentially approved for a lane where there would, I understand the lane has changed and there's other buildings around, but how is it not being upheld to single lot standards for a Carriage House?
So it's not an accessory building. If this were a separate building, there are rules related to accessory buildings in terms of height. We had a good discussion with the HPC at their last meeting about, in the Streetcar Historic District, it can only be two stories in height, et cetera. This is an addition to the building. So we are not applying the accessory building standards to this. And in terms of visual compatibility, as I noted, this lane is, and if even if you keep going east, is a little bit different in terms of what's on it. It's not carriage houses. It's actually, you have large scale buildings that come right up to the lake. So anyway, that's,
I understand, because it's an addition, it's an attached.
Correct.
To the
Otherwise,
building.
We would have had totally different.
It's not a standalone. So that's that. And then, my other point escaped my mind right now.
Okay. You can circle back later.
I'll come back.
Okay.
Are there additional questions for staff?
I did have one question. The connector, what's the inset on that connector? Is it, I saw some shadow on the drawing.
I don't know off the top of my head the exact dimension, but I'll let Michael, the project architect, walk you through and give you all of that.
Additional questions for Jonathan? Thank you, Jonathan. Would the petitioner please come forward and make sure you state your name for the record?
Oh, sorry, pushing the wrong one. Hello again. I'm Michael Garcia, representing 123 West Oglethorpe Avenue and LSVP Associates. Again, thank you to staff and to the board for their comments on our last continuance. All of the comments that we received were indeed needed to be further studied. Further study was indeed needed to be done onto the addition of this property. I can walk you through the floor plans, show you some of the changes we made and why we were able to kind of add additional fenestrations. I can show you the depth of that height fin away from the existing building facade, all of that. So the major change that we ended up making on the ground floor was we simply relocated our egress stair. It was originally located along the west side of the property. On the addition, we relocated it to the eastern side so that we were able to have that stair along the zero lot line, no need for windows in that area or anything like that. We do have some additional brick detailing that you'll see in some of the renders. And insofar as how far back this, the hyphen, I'll call it, Mr. Hull, is set back from our western elevation, we already have a five foot pathway, and it's set back an additional 7 feet. So it's over 12 feet set back from the property line. And then we did set back slightly the hyphen from the courtyard side just to create a distinguishing line of construction between what is the existing building and the addition. Going through some of the other kind of details that we ended up changing, we did end up lowering the building about a foot and a half. So that was something that we wanted to study a little bit further, understanding that while it is an addition, there still needs to be some sort of subserviency or inferiority to the original structure. So both the parapet and the hyphen roof are below the third story roof height of the existing structure. We kept majorly to the existing form of the building in terms of our floor plan. That didn't seem to be the contentious portion of the design, but we did want to study in particular how to make this building look less institutional, which I believe, Mr. Higgins, that was your comment. So one thing that we went back to was looking at ways of making the addition feel a little bit more symmetrical. While it's not the same width as the front end of the building, we did want to instill a four bay pattern of window fenestration so that it had some reference to the existing structure. We also wanted to add some additional details on the ground floor to help it, to help ground the building. A lot of buildings such as the Harper Folks House or larger residential homes throughout the district do have some sort of detailing along the ground floor that separates it from the upper floors. So we did go in with a different field brick or a different accent brick, I'll say. We created arched corbelled details around the arched storefronts, and then we mimicked that for the egress stair, which is going to be pulled back away from the lane so that there's a proper egress path. And we kept the windows above fairly simple. But focusing on the details between the window, the headers and sills, changing accent brick color, adding Soldier Course surrounds to the windows to kind of accentuate the base, the window fenestration vertically. And we did simplify the parapet and cornice addition. Like I said, we did lower it about a foot and a half, and we reduced the metal cornice portion to just a simple metal coping so that we could let the brick corbelling kind of be the main focus of that feature. I can walk you through and show you some of our renders, if that's also helpful. I don't think you included our overall renders. So I cannot walk you through the renders. But yeah, I'm happy to answer any questions that staff may have at this point. One comment. Regarding this elevation where we had minimal window fenestrations, we did end up coming back. Like I said, it is a unit that's stacked on all three floors. And we did try to provide a healthy amount of windows that would allow light to come through. And we are under the 15% window fenestration maximum that we're being held to by the International Building Code.
Thank you, Mr. Garcia. Are there questions for the applicant? Mr. Higgins.
First of all, I want to commend you on the changes that you've made.
Thank you.
Especially the fenestration. It's so much improved. And the treatment of the hyphen, it lightens it more, makes it much more visually compatible. I want to commend you.
Any other questions for the petitioner? Thank you, Mr. Garcia.
Thank you all.
Is there a member of the public that would like to speak on this matter? Please state your name for the record.
Hello, my name is James Huntrucker with the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. The design is an improvement, and we appreciate the changes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC again appreciates that the architect and the design team for meeting with HSF staff regarding this project and taking our comments into consideration. Our ARC is still of the opinion that the addition is too tall. However, it is a well-designed improvement to the first submission, and we support the petition as it's presented today.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? Thank you, sir. Just make sure you state your name for the record.
My name is Tony Abbott, and I own the building immediately east of this property. It's a four-story office building. It houses my law firm and several other businesses. We have parking in the rear, as you can see from the aerial photos and whatnot. There's still a significant amount of buildings, mine, the ones across the lane, et cetera, that don't front on the lane. The current lot utilizes the rear of the lot for 8 parking spaces. The construction of the new building will eliminate the 8 parking spaces. Parking is at a premium. We constantly have to kick people off of the rear of our property. We've got about 8 parking spaces. And we constantly have to remove people from there. SCAD students, et cetera. And we did convince the church owns the parking lot. They owned this property, which they sold, Independent Presbyterian Church. And you fully utilize that parking lot on Sundays and Wednesdays. And there's no parking allowed, I know, on Sundays by the public. And I assume that the patrons of this property, it's supposedly going to be an inn, will utilize the parking that's in the business, you know, that rents out parking spaces, because they're removing the parking that they are allocated to the lot by the construction of the building. I'm skeptical that 75% of the lot is covered. It is more, and it is in my unlearned experience, excessive and too tall. I have a question. Will the current masonry fence on the rear southeastern side of the lot be removed? And that's it. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Beep. Will you push that button back again? Yeah.
Put it back? Okay.
Yes.
I'm Peter Galloway, just a neighbor. I just had a couple questions for the petitioner. The main thing is super historic building, last pretty much building on that corridor that's original. It was moved, obviously, to save it. So question, why new windows are allowed on the east-facing gable of the house? There isn't any now. So curious why you're adding those and why those are approved. And then I don't know if there's anything that can be done about interior stuff, but interior's intact and they plan to demo the parlor woodwork on the wall to make it an open concept. So just questions about that. So thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Galloway. Are there other members of the public that wish to speak on this petition? Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
I'm going to let Mr. Jarles respond to the adjacent neighbor's parking request or questions regarding parking and fencing. I can respond to Mr. Galloway's questions. So the addition of the windows were added along the eastern facade. First off, it's a non-street fronting facade, so technically that's not within the purview of review. But however, we are anticipating rooms to be located along those ends, so we do want to be able to provide as much ample light to these places. And also, when the property was moved to this location in the 1980s, this elevation would also seemingly have never had windows located along that elevation as well. So those were added after the fact of period of significance. Regards to the interior, we're not going after any sort of tax credits or any sort of historic component to this with regards to the interior. So removing some of the walls I'm interested to know which one it is that you're seeing, because I thought we were keeping the main layout of these units. Is it with regards to? All of this here?
Yeah.
That's all being kept. Oh, right here. Yeah, to my knowledge, some of the build out on the back end is not historic. The first room is, yeah. Again, it's an interior to the building and we're not seeking any sort of tax credit. So.
Yeah. And just to simplify this, interiors of building, is not within our purview and can't be the basis of a decision. And before, Mr. Giles addresses the other comment, parking is also one of those issues, that is not within the purview of this board and can't be the basis of a decision, just for clarification.
Thank you. Just wanted to give context.
Of course. Absolutely.
Ryan Jarles, I'm representing the property owner of the Rhino Collective. We are obviously building out, so those five parking spaces we have in the rear will go away. At the end of this month is when we're stated to close on the neighboring property, which is the parking lot adjacent. The building in the corner is from probably the 1980s, so that'll go away at some point. So in the meantime, that parking lot will stay, but eventually, as we come forward with plans for a new building, that parking lot will also go. But as you know, there's no parking requirements along Oglethorpe. There are endless buildings on Oglethorpe that have no areas to park. So we're just going to be the next one, and that's just how it is. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question to that. It's slightly out of our purview, but I just have to ask it for clarification. Because it is being constructed as an inn, wouldn't there be under Nuzo parking requirements? Have you checked with the city about Nuzo?
If you look at the parking requirement map, we're in an area where you can it's not required at all. So there are certain areas where you can get reductions, and then there are certain areas in the heart of downtown where there's no parking. The Ritz-Carlton, all those rooms, no parking requirements. So we're just fitting within that space at this point.
When you're adding rooms. Okay. And I have a question about the addition of the windows on the east side, which the architect might be able to answer. Or do you want to just close public comment and then I move on? Sorry.
You can ask.
Okay. Can we just look at the addition of the windows where there currently are none on the east side real quick?
Sure.
I think that is one of the biggest concerns I have, because then you are altering the building in its historic current state to open up those openings and add a bunch of windows where there aren't any. And that is a historic building. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the addition, I appreciate the addition of the windows to make it look better, to make it look more like the building that it's a part of, but adding the windows, is there any evidence that this building might have had those windows historically? Is there anything, did that building never have those windows?
No, to point back to its original location, it was part of a series of townhomes that were all like
wall to wall.
At some point when the building was moved to this location, the wall was refinished with a stucco finish. So that's a non-historic stucco finish. And those windows were added to the west side of the property. So, there were several factors that led to us choosing to place these windows. One of them being that it helps to acclimate the courtyard a little bit. It provides a little bit of a livelihood. It provides a little bit of a change of materiality within that space. And the other one is we were trying to also match the existing windows that would be present in those units. So it's a double hung that would match the same configuration of the existing historic windows.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Garcia. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. Ms. Nagel, I'll start with you.
I have a problem with the addition of the windows in the historic fabric of this property. Just because it is altering the historic fabric of the building. So I think that is my biggest concern. The height in the back, I wish it wasn't. I agree with HSF and others that have spoken about the height. I would have liked to see that height in the back addition just not be so monumental. Those are my two comments.
Thank you. Mr. Higgins.
I'm very happy with the changes that have been made since the last time, because yes, I was the one that said it was institutional. I think it's just vastly improved. I fully support staff recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Houle?
I support the staff's recommendations.
Mr. Thompson?
I'd like to thank the architect team. Was very helpful on this project, and I support staff's recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. I'll go around one more time. Ms. Nagel?
No further comment.
Mr. Higgins?
No further comment.
Mr. Houle?
No comments.
Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
I will add my comments before entertaining a motion. Again, just wanted to be on record thanking both the architect and the staff for working through some issues. I know the first time we heard this, there was some pretty significant input from the public. So I also think that thanking our citizens for their diligence and tracking projects and voicing their concerns. And it's nice when you have an architect that's willing to listen and work through those issues. And I think ultimately we end up with a better product. So I think this is a good example of the system working the way that it should. So I would commend both staff, the architect, and our diligent citizens in the historic district. At this point, I will entertain a motion.
This is Stan Houle. I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition 24003-3354 at 123 West Oglethorpe Avenue, with the conditions as listed in the staff recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. The motion on the floor is to approve the petition with the included staff condition. Do I have a second?
Higgins, second.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Ms. Nagel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
The ayes have that. The petition is approved. Next up on the regular agenda is item number 11, petition of Noble Hardy House Condo Association, file number 24-002498 for 501 East Charlton Street, alterations.
Thank you. This is Caitlin Chamberlain again presenting this project. I'm going to pull up some other images as well. So the applicant is requesting approval for rehabilitation and alterations of the main house and carriage house at 501 East Charlton Street. Just a little recap on the project history. This has had work done with and without COAs and is detailed below. Most recently, this was presented to the HDBR on June 12, 2024. It was originally continued to the August meeting, but more time was needed to prepare requested information. I'm going to go over what the HDBR decision was, but also address what has changed since that time. So the first condition was to provide clarification about whether the windows on the main house and carriage house were replaced. The applicant stated that the windows were repaired but not replaced. And then the second condition along those lines, provide information about the window work that was done and ensure that the headers and framing will be the same as the historic configuration. So that was kind of seeing what had been over time on Google Street View, where it seems all just kind of like a flat framing was installed around them. So the existing windows were repaired, but the framing had been replaced, which the applicant said was due to the condition of the wood. The applicant has provided a header sample, which is proposed to be PVC with the intent of preventing future wood rot. The appropriateness will be discussed in a later section, but at this moment, I will pass around that sample so y'all can take a look at it. All right, the third and fourth conditions were to remove the non-compliant shutters and redesign the shutters to be either a panel or louver style, ensure that the new shutters are hinged, operable, and sized to fit each window opening. Also ensure that they will be constructed of a durable wood. So the current non-compliant shutters will be removed, and the applicant has provided the similar types or two similar shutter type options, but in this case, we just requested that they would choose one of the two. In conversations with the applicant after the report had been completed, just ongoing discussions, they said they would prefer to have the one with the two bars and not the three. The fifth condition, provide clarification about materials used in the work that was done on the front porch steps, railings, and balusters as seen in the 2022 Google Street View photos. Front porch work was initially restored in the 1980s. Work done since 2022 appears to include all wood elements. The structural report provided gives details on the repairs to the front porch that should happen and are among the first of the repairs noted on the repairs timeline provided by the applicant. The sixth and final condition was provide clarification about the chimneys that were removed from the carriage house. During the June HDBR meeting, the applicant explained that the chimneys were removed to remediate water infiltration originating on the roof and weight-bearing concerns. They proposed to rebuild a chimney on the west side of the carriage house that is not operational. Nothing suggesting the center chimney would also be built, potentially due to weight concerns on the roof. So at the June 12th HDBR meeting, the board requested that a new structural report be provided, as one had been done several years ago, and then a repair schedule. So what the applicant did submit would be a recent structural report with some remediations that are suggested, as well as some of the photographs that were provided during the inspection. And then there is a timeline provided that goes through what the main building and the carriage house, what they would do, you know, starting with which repairs and moving forward. So regarding some of the Secretary of the Interior standards for historic character, with the work done on the window frames were altered when they were replaced over the last few years. Staff recommends that the applicant restores the window headers and framing on both the main house and carriage house to the historic configuration that was there previously, as can be seen in photos, Google Street View photos. For deteriorated features, the application notes removal of all siding to install a water barrier and insulation. However, total removal may be damaging to existing siding that would otherwise not require repair or replacement. Staff does not support the total removal of the siding for this work, as was the previous stance on this, and recommends omitting this part of the project, which was also denied in 2016. Staff requests that the applicant provides photographic documentation to show the deterioration of the areas proposed for replacement prior to starting the work, and scheduling an on-site meeting with staff before moving forward with a high volume of removal. Also, the structural report recommends repairing deteriorated porch elements, and this work is now part of the repair schedule. Staff finds the proposed in-kind repair work would meet the standard. And then for the framing to be returned, the applicant seemed amenable to doing that, but is proposing a PVC header due to poor performance of the wood headers. Based on its appearance from the third story and the small amount proposed of this substitute material, staff finds that this could potentially work, but also seeks input from the board, as you just saw that sample. As noted in Preservation Brief 16, the use of substitute materials on historic building exteriors, while the use of matching materials to replace historic ones is always preferred under the standards for rehabilitation, the standards also purposely recognize that flexibility may sometimes be needed when it comes to new replacement materials as part of a historic rehabilitation project. Substitute materials that closely match the visual and physical properties can be used on many rehabilitation projects in ways that are consistent with the standards. So with that, get back to our recommendation. Staff recommends to approve the request for rehabilitation and alterations of the main house and carriage house at 501 East Charlton Street, both proposed and after the fact, with the following conditions to be submitted to staff for review and approval prior to starting the project, because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One, remove the minimum siding necessary to inspect and repair / replace damaged structural elements, eliminating the total removal as proposed, provide photographs to staff prior to starting the work, repair, replace only siding that has deteriorated beyond repair with siding to match in materials, thickness, and design, confirm with staff prior to starting the work. Two is just to confirm which shutter type from the two designs provided and confirm the wood type. Three, provide a brick sample for the chimney project. Four, provide information about the mortar type and provide a sample prior to starting the repointing work, and to ensure all window framing and sills that were changed are repaired to reflect the historic configuration. Thank you.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff before we speak to the applicant?
Yes, Higgins. A couple of things. Use of faux applied brick. Are there examples in the historic district?
I would need to look into it. I don't know anything off the top of my head.
In general, and speaking very general, in cases where chimneys are damaged or removed without permission, have they been ordered to be rebuilt with true brick?
I've honestly never seen this happen before, but I would assume that it would most likely be that.
the use of the PVC, other than the fact that it doesn't rot, were you given any other reasons for it?
No, but we can certainly check with the applicant who is here.
Have you approved use of it prior to this time?
The only time I've seen it is on windows on non-contributing buildings, but I've not seen anything on contributing. But that's why we just said could. We wanted to kind of hear from the board on this as well because we hadn't seen this proposed before on a historic building.
And the last question on the timeline, it still says removal of siding and putting up OSB in a couple of lines. I thought we weren't doing that.
That's why that was one of our conditions, was to ensure, you know, we're going to spot treat this, not full removal.
Are there additional questions for Caitlin? I think since we've asked Caitlin, just a clarification, Jonathan, if you have any insight into the use of faux brick in a, I find it hard to believe that that would be acceptable under the rehabilitation standards, but that's not my area of expertise.
Yeah, no, thank you all for your comments. So it's not something we've seen before. What we've been trying to do with this application and other ones is where we're seeing some new materials that people are looking at, bringing those to you and seeing where you all stand on it. This is not going to be a functioning chimney. It's going to be a faux chimney. And so the applicant, I believe, had shown us a sample of the faux brick. And there was some question, you know, about whether that would be visually compatible from a distance, given where it was being, you know, put back. But to directly answer your question, it would be a departure. But we did want to give you all the opportunity to weigh in here before we just kind of gave a blanket no. And this is something that we're going to be bringing to you on some other proposed materials in the future, because as you all have probably heard, not brick, but we have been hearing from folks about, you know, the requirement for always having wood windows, and whether, given the climate, is that something. I'm not endorsing one way or the other. I'm not saying that now at all. But we have been hearing from people, you know, there are new materials that can match the appearance and are more durable. But this is new. The applicant asked us to show it to you all, and so we thought it made sense to have a discussion.
Great. Thank you. Are there additional questions for staff? Mr. Thompson?
Well, I don't understand, like Mr. Higgins, why the chimney that had been taken down can't be reconstructed with brick to reflect how it originally was. So I guess that's not a question for staff, but the applicant, I guess. But
yeah, I would check with him.
I said you're thinking about that. It seems an odd place to use, I guess, this artificial brick stamped onto plywood base or whatever to build the chimney. I don't know. I guess I need that explained.
Yeah, I think our understanding was not that it was going to be artificial brick, but more like a brick veneer with real brick, but not like some fake complete thing. But we'll let the applicant clarify that.
To clarify, what I see replacing it is a box, basically, that the real brick, that's a little portion of brick, could be epoxied or glued onto the wood and then put up there to extend the chimney. So that can be laid there for future comments by the applicant, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Are there any additional questions for staff? Thank you, Caitlin. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Thank you. Thank you, board members. I did bring with me some samples of those bricks. They are really brick.
Can you just please state your name for the record? Sorry.
Richard Siufi.
Thank you.
I'm just going to let you look at it before I can start.
You can go ahead and get started.
Okay. So you guys see the structural report that was recommended by the board last time we completed this item. If you want me to read that part, or I think Caitlin already covered it, there was no issues with the structure of the building. Okay. All right, so the list of alteration we have it's broken into the two building, the main building and the carriage house. So what you're seeing here on the top left is the underbelly of the porch, which is almost non-existent beam that's left from that. So just the porch where you walk outside in the front porch. So that will be replaced with in-kind material. Next to it again, top left corner is one of the posts at the top of the staircase that have to be repaired, okay? But it's going to stay in kind material, and everything is going to be used the same with these decoration. I move on to the middle. This is the north section of the roof that we have a lot of sitting water piled on top of the roof. That membrane will be removed and replaced with shingles. And then the columns or the portico, these will be repaired. This type of work has been already done on the south side, so the staff is welcome to come and check on how we did those repairs. So the next is the sidings. So we have two sides of the building that has not yet been fixed, which is the north side and the east side of the main building. And that would be our next and ultimate phase. There's also a little louver that is just an attic louver that also be replaced in symmetry. The north side and the south side of the building underneath the porch, both porch front and back, has a lot of deterioration on the repainting. For some reason, Sparrow like to eat that mortar, so we have had a lot of holes taken out of this mortar. We wanted to recommend, and MPC also agreeing with us, I think, on lifting these air conditioning that are sitting currently on the sidewalk, extending the porch, the back porch, a little bit to position those AC on that AC platform or porch platform, whatever you kind of call it. So I kind of taken a picture of the back, that where that porch stops in the back. And those AC are just underneath it. So we would be able to shrink more distance, would have less of those AC showing from the street, and would be lifted off the ground. There's twice an issue where the breakers were pulled out as if somebody was trying to steal the AC. So they just pull all the electrical outlet out of the breaker, and I think their motion was the next thing, just cut the AC line and take them away. So that would make it harder for these people who is interested in stealing those ACs or compressors. The header, so as you saw that header, that is actually the initial header that we had before. So we are trying to replace it exactly with the same thing, but instead with wood rotten. And it being on the third floor would be very hard to replace. We'd have something that would last much longer, but at the end it's the same thickness of the material with the same angle. So do not see what the difference would be. On the carriage house, I just jumped over this one just because it's kind of give you a location where everything's located. So I'll get to this part where initially this building was only a two-story house and it was never been a three-story house till somewhere after 1870, and we don't know exactly when is the date, where these houses actually got extended, and now there's the third floor take advantage of that
porch area on both sides. So in comparison, the two first floor are very, very small. You basically can walk from one side to the other of that house, and there is no separation. There's no bedrooms. There is nothing. They're just like a big, long hallway. Okay, so on the carriage house, again, changing the sidings and putting that chimney back. So we will use the sample of the chimney on the left to build the west side to make the chimney on the right side. That roof will be replaced, which is currently, with, as you see the patches on it, will be totally replaced, repaired. And finally, putting those headers on the windows, on every window on both floors. So in general, these were the repairs. I can go on into talking about the different shutters that we initially had discussed, but I think you guys already kind of covered it. We just have to pick on the one. So I was not going to cover that area and the reason why we picked these shutters. So, all right, on the chimneys. So Mr. Thompson was suggested it. That's exactly what's going to happen is you put a backboard, and then you would use mortar exactly like you would put a real bricks. They sell a special kind of corners. So the corners want to be where they actually show the thickness of a corner. So I didn't bring one with me because they didn't have it. I went to Lowe's and Home Depot. They do sell it. As those bricks, as you passed around, they sell the corners and they sell those bricks. So the corner has to look like from the side as you have a thick, long brick behind. I don't know if I can explain it. I can draw it some better. But as you put the corner, you have that 3 inches almost of brick that look like it. So just to give you an example that you would not be able to see that this is a flat brick. Okay. They know how to follow through all around all four corners to make it look like it's a exact corner. Okay. And that sample of the aluminum roof that we'd be put. And that was it.
Thank you. Do we have questions for the petitioner?
Higgins, yes. First of all, I just want to reiterate what I said at the last meeting, that I'm not fans of things being done without COAs and after the fact. But with regard to the chimney, the last hearing you said the west chimney that was removed was only removed to just below the roof line. So why don't you just rebuild it with bricks and let it pierce through the roof again, especially since you're replacing the roof?
If this is what the board wants, we can. I'm trying to say to you, this is also feasible. There is a list, a long list of acceptable replacement material that across the country now accepts these are something that you put as on a building. But we are willing to do whatever you guys want.
And with regard to the PVC headers, have you pursued the idea of perhaps putting a flashing over wood like most the rest of us do in the district?
We already have flashing. That's that part of the flashing we covered with what you guys call the flat framing. We already have that done. So we can continue putting piece of wood, but we are talking about wood that is actually kind of on a position. We had to go with an angle because we wanted to keep the push the water down. But yeah, it's just going to look like a long piece of metal that you want to see. That's right. That's also possible.
I think you're missing my point. You put flashing over the wood. It's done commonly on all the frame buildings.
I thought I answered that. We have a flashing over the wood already. We do have flashing over the wood already. I mean, if I can show you the picture, we have flashing over the wood. So what you're suggesting is that you want to have the header covered from the back to the bottom, from the back to the front, covered with the flashing. Yes, we could do that. The diamonds in the studio. Is that what you tried to tell me? The header will have a flashing from the back to the front. We could do that.
Okay.
It's possible. Yes, sir.
But you said you already have that?
We don't have a header. We have a flashing over the wood that is currently present. We don't have a header. But if we put the header back, We will put the flashing all over from the back to the front. Yes, it's possible. Did that answer your question?
Sure.
Are there additional questions for the petitioner?
Nagel, with the replacement of the chimney, just to see where we end up here, are you wanting to put the chimney back, or is it something you're doing to satisfy the needs of the COA and the city just because it was taken down without a permit? What would you prefer? Let's put it that way. Are you wanting to put it back with the faux brick or leave it out entirely? I'm not saying that one or the other. I'm just trying to see where you're coming from with the chimney.
Where we're coming from is these are not functional chimneys, okay? They shouldn't be turned back on because they would be cause of fire for this house, especially the age of that house. We would prefer that this chimney would not be used no longer, and we would put just fake chimney on the top.
That's right, but it's already been removed all the way down. So we're not talking.
Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so I thought last time we had talked about one having been removed just to the roof line and the other one was taken all the way down from the start. So obviously that cannot come back. That's not the one I'm talking about. I'm talking about the one in the roof line. So we're leaving out entirely the one that was taken out from top to bottom. You're not putting that one back, and that's not in your plans. Okay. The one that goes all the way to the roof is the one that you're planning on putting back, the faux brick. Is there a reason you want to put that back, or are you okay leaving it out at this point?
So the reason we would like to put faux brick and put just that top, this would be framed to the that top of that chimney will be framed to the rafter. Eventually, these chimney, since they're not being used, they could be replaced on the inside, like we did in the middle. But that chimney on the outside will stay there. Okay.
But it's what I'm saying. But it's not real.
Okay. So let's start first from the beginning. That chimney that has two options. You're saying if the board wants us to rebuild it, we will rebuild it. Thinking on, this is taking a lot of space on the middle of the house that is not a functional chimney. Then that would just be at the end, just an cumbersome for us on the inside of the house. On the outside of the house, okay, it will still look like a chimney. Either we put the faux chimney or we put the original chimney. It's still going to look like a chimney. It's going to be a chimney.
Okay. Thank you.
Last time you were before us, I know that we had recommended two different courses of action, one to get a structural assessment of the house because we were worried in the state of disrepair that we found it, the structural integrity of delaying further repair. And the second recommendation was to work with a licensed general contractor so that we could fully understand the scope of work. Is that something that you're pursuing?
Yes.
And is that something... that's okay. Is that something that you can share with this board or with staff? I think the issue that we're having is because there are so many things that were done without a COA that we're trying to catch up with work that has been done, work that has been half done, work that needs to be done. And my fear is the further we delay this, the further the house falls into disrepair, but without having a full picture of the work that needs to be done, the scope that you're undertaking, and the confidence that a licensed general contractor is going to oversee the work. I'm hesitant to say move forward with, the kind of patchwork repairs that we're looking at.
Yeah. And I want to secure that is we are working with directly with a registered licensed contractor. This information will be provided to the staff with the compliance office. And I think the two are working together. The MPC staff and the compliance office are working together to keep this going and this going in progress in a quickly manner.
Okay, thank you. Are there any additional questions? Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Is there a member of the public that wishes to speak on this item?
Once again, you're going to hear from me a lot today. I'm sorry. Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC shares a lot of the same concerns that you just expressed. We have concerns regarding the scope of work that's proposed for this building, and also once it is eventually probably approved, ensuring that the work is completed as approved with quality materials. We also feel that not requiring the reconstruction of both chimneys with real masonry, is a missed opportunity and is not acceptable.
Thank you. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
Do not have much to comment to say about that.
Okay, thank you. At this time, we will now enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. I will start with you, Mr. Thompson.
Roll of the dice, huh? I have one question, I guess, for staff, and that is, are you happy with your recommendation at this point in working with the applicant? Will it be move the project forward the way that it should?
In the interest of moving the project forward and not going back and forth till we're blue in the face about things, we feel like this is just the way to move forward. So we would still stand by it. Still working with the applicant throughout the process as we request in the conditions.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Houle.
When Mr. Thompson said roll with the dice, I unfortunately kind of have a feeling that, or at least the way I feel, is that our whatever we decide today is going to be a bit of a roll with the dice. I'm not at all comfortable with the presentation that we just heard. I'm not at all comfortable with what is being proposed. I think I go back to the chair's comment about having a contractor, maybe even hearing from the contractor who can go walk through these concerns and these problems that just kind of shout at you from the screen here. And so not that I'm going to move for a continuance, but I think we're still too early to approve this to where it only comes back to staff.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. Caitlin, could you do me a favor and just pull up the staff recommendations again?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. My comments are, you know, same following along with my question for the petitioner. I think I would like to see as an added condition that staff meet with a licensed contractor to review the scope of work to include the conditions. And, you know, it's also my opinion that the use of faux brick, I just don't see where that is acceptable anywhere else in the historic district. And so I don't agree that that's an appropriate concession to be made in this case. So I would change that condition as well. But again, those are just my comments.
I concur with two prior comments. It's my feeling, I am so uneasy about this, but it needs to proceed to preserve the building. But I have zero confidence. I feel staff needs to see a full scope of work from a contractor prior to commencement of work. I am strongly opposed to the use of the faux brick. And yes, I feel both chimneys need to be rebuilt with using real brick. I do not support the use of the PVC. Nobody else is using it. I have wood windows on my house. The wood works just fine. So I think we perhaps just need to add a couple of conditions and clarify a couple of conditions in this, we can get this moving, but put a lot more responsibility on staff to review the scopes and to approve things. We just got to get this thing moving. I mean, I lived down the street from this building for 15 years, and it's just been a mess. So.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Ms. Nagel?
As much as I hate to continue this one because I think it's been so many times, but I don't think we've done enough progress to really make a decision here. I feel like it's all over the place. I don't feel we have a full scope. I really would love to say let's just decide and move on because we really don't want to keep doing this, but I don't see the full scope. I don't see the point of adding a faux chimney with faux brick at all. I think that is a bad thing for the historic landmark district. I understand places might do it, but this is the landmark historic district, so we have to respect materials. That I don't agree with the faux brick. For staff recommendation, it was a provide a sample. They've now provided a sample. We've seen it, but we all don't seem to agree on the faux brick. There's that. There's also the one thing I was going to ask the petitioner, and I'll just mention it because it's another reason that I would choose to continue it, is the front of the house with the trellis instead of the balustrades on the front steps. I don't see a staff recommendation on that. I don't see comments on that. I hadn't caught that before either, so I'm really weirded out with the trellis on the stairs part. I don't even know what that material is, and I don't know that we've ever even spoken about it. So I just have too many parts about this that I would not be able to support approval as is.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. I'll go around one more time. Mr. Thompson.
Just for record, I wasn't referring roll the dice to the project, but the fact that you were trying to decide which way to go, and it came this way. I agree with the comments of my other board members. I'm just not sure what to do about it. It seems we don't approve something, the project isn't going to be moving forward to get preservation of the building. So that's why I asked the question about staff's recommendation. If we need to add some things to that, or require some, I don't know if we have the authority to require any reporting on the progress of this, but obviously we're not confident in that, and that there are issues that probably haven't been fully resolved, but at the same time, the contractor or the owners are not moving forward or don't appear to be. So that was totally confusing. I guess what I'm suggesting is moving it forward with lots of stuff attached to it.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Hull.
I think the issue that Mr. Thompson raised about, well, if we don't like what's on the paper, what is our suggestion going to be? And I think, Madam Chair, that your suggestion and other comments that I would be much more comfortable if we continued this with the instruction that when the applicant comes back is that we have I'm throwing the words out and they might be wrong, a licensed contractor that has developed a full scope of work for what needs to be done in this house. And maybe they can use the schedule that was listed in today, but give us more confidence that's what they're proposing to do. One is going to fix the problem, and two, gets the building back up to shape. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Hull. I will reiterate my comments and my concern. I understand the desire to continue this because of the level of ambiguity, but I think that in a situation where you have a house that is deteriorating as we watch, that, you know, there is a way to move it forward with some additional protections and conditions in the approval. One would be to require, you know, collaboration with a licensed contractor, an agreed scope of work that could be done at the staff level. And I think, you know, the things that we've seen today with the FOBRIC, if those were added as conditions, we could at least move this forward to start to save and preserve this building, because I think, you know, further delaying it and asking them to come back to review that scope of work when it can be done at the staff level is just adding more time for further deterioration.
Quick question for staff.
Yes.
If we were to approve this with additional requirements, if there was disagreement between the staff and the petitioner, staff can bring this back before us, could they not?
Yes.
Because I still feel if we could get a complete scope of work from a contractor that staff can approve, we can move this forward, and if staff is not happy with it, it comes right back here. I strongly feel we need to get this thing moving. This house is just rotting.
Ms. Nagel.
I feel that one way to do this would be, yes, to perhaps deconstruct it. Are there parts that we could, and this is throwing a whole other wrench, but could we separate this? Could we say some parts can be worked on while the two issues that we all seem to have be addressed? It doesn't all have to be worked on at the same time. Or rework the staff recommendations to be more encompassing of what our concerns currently are.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. I think that it's a decision for this board. So there's two pathways forward: a continue, which means no work will be done for at least another 30 days, or as we have suggested, conditional approval to include the concerns that were raised by the board. I can't myself make a motion. I can entertain one, and I can only give my opinion and advice on the best way to move it forward, which I feel like I have done. Jonathan?
I'm sorry. Thank you for all your comments. Just wanted to add a couple things. We spent a lot of time with the applicant. And as we noted, the city of Savannah now has a preservation officer, Jessica Baldwin, who's here with us today. We have a very close working relationship with the city, and we are working to improve code enforcement. The reason we are recommending approval with these conditions, as you all have noted, we have received so many complaints about the scaffolding, about work being done on this property, that we are trying to move, you know, with, I hate football metaphors, but move this down the field and try to get us at least towards some kind of resolution here. And I know we will work closely with the city of Savannah code enforcement to require that. And this is another issue that we've discussed in some of our pre-meetings that we're going to be coming back to you, where when we approve after the fact COAs, that people don't have 2 years to do that work. Because I believe the applicant wants to get this work done, the challenge that we are in right now is that if you approve an after-the-fact COA under the current regulations, the applicant has 2 years to do that work, and we have no mechanism to force them to do any of that work. And so that's just another challenge. But we do feel we've reached a good point with the applicant who's here today. I'm trying to move this forward in good faith, and I know that Jessica and her team will work closely with us on that.
Quick question, Higgins. Is it within our purview to put a deadline in the conditions that they must present, for example, a full scope of work to staff within 30 days?
You can do that. I was just referring to we have no way to force someone, as you know, if somebody comes before you and you approve a 10-story hotel, they don't have to build it. So same applies to a homeowner. If you approve replacement windows, they don't have to replace the windows. They just have to follow what you approved.
Thank you, Jonathan. Are we good with our board discussion? Okay, at this time, I will entertain a motion.
Higgins, I move the Savannah Historic District Board of Review with regard to 501 East Charlton Street, which is 24-002498, approve the request for rehabilitation alteration with the following conditions. As laid out by staff, number one, remaining the same. Number two, remaining the same. Replace the wording of number three to rebuild both chimneys using true brick. Number four, remaining the same. Number five, remaining the same. And adding two additional conditions. Number six, there will be no use of PVC as a replacement material, and that petitioner will provide staff with a full scope of work from a licensed contractor within 30 days of today.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. The motion on the floor is to approve the petition for rehabilitation and alterations with staff conditions one and two as presented, three amended to read to rebuild both chimneys with true brick, conditions four and five as listed, an additional condition number six to eliminate the use of PVC as an approved material, and condition number seven that the petitioner work with staff and provide a full scope of work for a from a licensed contractor before commencing work within 30 days. Is there a second?
Cool, second.
Madam Chair, I'd like to propose an amendment, I think that's what it'd be called here, to add that the applicant report back to this board showing progress of the improvements that are listed. I don't know if that's, we can do that, but that's, no.
I don't believe that we can do that. But the motion on the floor is from Mr. Higgins. Do you want to amend your motion or leave as is?
I prefer to leave it as is and leave it to staff to report back.
Okay, so the motion still stands on the floor. There was a second from Mr. Hull. Do you want to second the existing motion again?
Second.
Second. Thank you, Mr. Hull. Mr. Thompson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Hull?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That motion is approved with the conditions as stated in the motion. Next item, actually, let's take a brief 5-minute recess. So we'll be back here at, what time does that say? 3:32. Okay, thank you. We will resume the meeting with the next item on the regular agenda, item number 12, petition of anonymous tattoo, file number 24-003792, 209 East River Street, 212 East Lower Factors Walk, an illuminated sign.
Afternoon. So, as y'all remember from last month, this was in front of you. The applicant was proposing an internally lit open sign in the window. In this district, since it's Factors Walk, unfortunately, that sign could not be approved because internally lit signs were not allowed in this district. So the applicant has since come back with the sign that you see on your screen. It will be externally illuminated with no internal elements. Overall, staff found that the proposed design, lights, and all met the standards. There was a condition on the staff recommendation that staff review the proposed materials for the lighting. The applicant did provide that information this morning, and it does meet the standards, so that condition doesn't really apply anymore. Wasn't much to say about this since everything met the standards. So with that, staff does approve the wall sign at 212 East Lower Factors Watch. Again, that condition was met as of this morning.
Great. Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions for staff on this one? Okay.
And the applicant is here if y'all want to talk to him.
All right. If the applicant would like to come forward, you certainly don't have to if you don't want to. Are there questions for the applicant from the board? Okay, you're good. Is there a member of the public that would like to speak on this? Oh, sorry.
Don't worry, it's good. It's not bad. Again, Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC has no issue with the proposed sign or lighting. However, I would like to make a general comment that while obviously what's being submitted or what was previously submitted doesn't meet the current ordinance, what was previously proposed was less invasive and detrimental to the historic masonry, and we believe that that should be a factor in the decision-making process in the future for signs. So just a general comment that we wanted to make.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? The petitioner want to address public comment? Again, you don't have to. Okay. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Ms. Nagel, I'll start with you.
No comment.
Mr. Higgins?
No comment.
Mr. Houle?
No comment.
Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Since there were no comments the first round, I will not go around again, and at this time, I will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, this is Mr. Houle. I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition 24002379 COA at 212 East Lower Factors Walk and 209 East River as requested, because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. The motion on the floor is to approve as presented. Do I have a second?
Higgins, second.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Ms. Nagel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That petition is approved. Moving on to the next item of the agenda, item number 13, petition of Hanson Architects, file number 24-004416 for 401-409 East Bay Street, new construction.
Thank you. This is Caitlin presenting this project for 401-409 East Bay Street. The applicant is requesting approval for new construction part one, height and mass, including rehabilitation and an addition for three properties located at 401 through 409 East Bay Street. There's also a request to subdivide 401 East Bay Street back into two parcels as they were originally. This report will consider the full request as part one. So just to kind of give a little bit of an overview, the applicant provided a highly detailed history of the three buildings that are part of the project. The three sites where the current buildings exist were noted as A, B, and C. The information provided, just a summary for site A, is at the intersection of East Bay and Habersham Streets. So that's this building. It's it was a dry cleaners, I believe, for a while. Is currently not in use. It was constructed sometime between 1954 and 1973. It is not contributing. Proposed work includes demolition of the non-contributing building and construction of a four-story building with a two-story rear addition. Site B is right next door. It's a one-story brick building constructed between 1888 and 1898 and is the only contributing building in this project. It is in fair condition except for structural damage along the south wall facing Bay Lane. Proposed work is to renovate and restore the building and add a two-story rear addition. And then Site C, which is next door, further one down further from that, one-story brick building in good condition, non-contributing, constructed prior to 1937. Proposed work includes demolition of an existing non-contributing addition on the rear. and construct a new three-story building and restore the existing single-story building, adding a new roof terrace with stairs. So we'll first talk a little bit about the addition. The applicant proposes to add a two-story addition towards the rear of the contributing building on Site B. The addition would connect to the rear addition on Site A, where this would not be possible for access in the existing historic building. The design of the addition is differentiated from the historic structure in a way that would not allow for confusion or a misinterpretation that the addition was an original part of the building. Now, during the pre-meeting, we had passed around the architectural model. I didn't know if anybody wanted to see that again. We can certainly bring it back out. Now, the form of the building will remain intact, and the addition would be installed through the flat roof, which is not visible from a public right-of-way. The design is compatible yet differentiated from the historic building and the use of different materials. According to the drawings and architectural model provided by the applicant, the addition will be incorporated into half of the rooftop of Building B. It is not smaller in height, but it is situated towards the rear. Due to the addition being on the roof of the structure, visible significant historic materials will not be damaged. The front elevation of Building B is arguably the most significant as it faces Bay Street and is in better condition than the rear facade. By placing the addition at the rear, it keeps the front elevation features undisturbed. Just to kind of go through the elevations. Another aspect of this project that did have to be considered because demolition is proposed was the criteria for demolition of a non-contributing building to reevaluate that it was not a contributing building. Staff found the research information provided by Ethos Preservation adequately shows that Building A and the existing addition on the rear of Building C do not meet the above criteria for contributing status. And just to kind of show a little bit of that, the Sanborn maps have shown that what's there now on Site A was certainly not built within the period of significance or was not found to be contributing outside of that previously. So this is just over the different periods of time, the evolution of the property. And then for Building C, the report showed that there is an addition on the rear that's also not historic and that the removal of it isn't really taking any historic material away. Just wanted to briefly touch on that as it was part of this. And then the other thing that had to be taken into consideration was there is a subdivision also requested, but staff found because that historically was the case that those lots were not combined, that that met the standards for a subdivision. So with that, let me just jump to the recommendation. So staff recommends to approve the request for new construction part one, height and mass, including rehabilitation and an addition for three properties located at 401, 409 East Bay Street, as well as the lot subdivision as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. Thank you.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff? All right, would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon, Paul Hansen with Hansen Architects. Patrick Feltz is on the application, and when this meeting date came up, Patrick had planned a long family trip, and it was really kind of impossible for him to make changes. So he came to me and said, would I come up here and talk to y'all? And so I'm happy to do that today. As we mentioned, Ellen is here today, Ellen Harris with Ethos. She's part of the design team, and she's going to talk a little bit about the history after I kind of give my introduction. And then I'll come back and kind of walk through the design with y'all. Also, I have the architect of record here, and Matt Mitchell, and then Matt White, who is the developer. If y'all have any questions of those two gentlemen later on, they'll be happy to speak to you too. I'm kind of wearing two hats here today because I'm actually live behind this property on Bryan Street. I've lived there for over 28 years. And we've constantly just looked at this whole complex deteriorating over the years. And then it's been totally vacant for over 10 years after the laundry closed their little business there on the corner. So, you know, we've been anxious to know what was going to happen. I know other developers have been here and they looked at other ideas. They've asked for a lot of different things, you know, height changes, tearing down buildings, et cetera. And obviously those didn't go anywhere, but we're here today to save what's there. I think do a very compatible new construction that's within the height map. We're not asking for any variances in the height map or the design here today. And I think that's a very positive thing. So I'm going to ask Ellen to come up and give you a little brief history, and then I'll come back and walk you through the design. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Ellen Harris with Ethos Preservation. As Mr. Hansen mentioned, we do have a pretty detailed report that's a part of your package, and I'm just going to give you kind of a higher level, quick overview of it to save your time. Of course, if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. So we kind of broke down the site into three parts, part A, site A, site B, and site C. And I think it's, you know, one important thing to note is that there's only one contributing building on the site out of the three. It's the middle one is the contributing one. The other two, A and C, are non-contributing. And so if we look back at the evolution and development of these three sites, you can see, I think it's important to note how finely grained the development is. There were multiple buildings at different times. Even on site A, there were, you know, there was a boarding house next door to that was three stories, next door to a two-story barber shop. There was a building facing the Haversham Street that had its own address and its own entrance. So you can kind of see how the site developed over time. This middle building here was built by 1898, and that is the contributing building. It's changed very, very little over time. It's still very intact, although deteriorating, very intact. And so you can see that three-story building on the corner there as it steps down to a two-story building, as it steps down to a one-story building as it goes into the interior of the site, as well as at the rear, it steps down along the lane. Interestingly, I did find an image of John LeBay, a rather famous Savannah architect, had designed a concrete walk building for this site in the 1950s, and it was demolished to make way for the current dry cleaner site. But I was not aware that there was that interim in between, so I thought that was interesting. With that, I did want to mention that Building C, which is this third building here, while it's technically non-contributing, we do think that it has historic value and historic significance. It was built prior to 1937, and it is proposed to be retained and restored as a part of this development. So I'll just show you a few historic photographs, and then I'll turn it back over to Mr. Hansen. So that's this third building here, pre-1937, although technically non-contributing. We do have some interior photographs of the two brick buildings, and you can see the character-defining features of those buildings. This is the 1937 non-contributing building. It has this lovely clerestory, this very interesting roof structure supporting here, and that will all be retained and preserved. This is within the contributing building also has a really interesting wooden truss system, which will be incorporated into the design of the space. And with that, I will turn it back over to Mr. Hansen to walk you through a little bit more about the new design proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Harris.
So the first slide you see there is really the overall site plan. The kind of light gray area here is the existing cleaners, which will be removed. The rest of the site currently is vacant. Then we have the contributing building here in the middle and non-contributing smaller building. This is a little wooden kind of lean-to structure that we are proposing to remove. And this is just a remaining vacant property here. Whoops. Sorry. Can I show me how to get back here to what I need to do? Keep going all the way back. Yeah. No. Yeah. Keep going. Yeah. Next slide. Okay. All right. So this is an aerial view. We have lot A, we talked about, Ellen talked about, and lot B, which will be retained. It will be an addition placed approximately 40 feet to the, from the front of the elevation to the rear, it'll be a two-story addition, and then building C will be retained. This is a kind of an overall existing first floor plan. We've been working with the city along Habersham Street to get a turn in there for vehicle drop off. So there'll be a main entrance into the hotel component of Habersham Street. And then moving further to the right, the two-story building, the light gray area is the existing building, single story, and then towards the rear, we'll be placing a two-story addition to the building there. And then on the third building on the right, that will be maintained. And then to the rear, we'll be placing on that vacant piece of property a three-story building. Again, this is just kind of an overview of the facade along Bay Street. The plan is obviously to retain the facades to the two contributing and non-contributing building. We plan to use the existing historical openings in the two facades and restore those to their original condition with new windows. All the brick veneer will be possibly, a lot of it will have to be removed and then reconstructed. It's in relatively bad shape. But the existing facades will be retained in their original design for both buildings B and C. You can see towards the back, this addition we'll talk about on building B. Like I said, it's 40 feet to the rear off Bay Street. So visually, you'll never see it unless maybe you're across Bay Street in Emmett Park. You may be able to see a little glimpse of it. And then we do have this pop-up on building C. Again, it's about 25 feet to the rear of building C, so it will not be visual from the street. And then, of course, this is a new addition we're talking about, new building. So this is, again, the facade along Bay Street with the two buildings and then the four-story new construction, which is within the guidelines. We're not asking for a bonus story. There was some conversation on the first floor having a floor-to-floor height of 16 feet, which is within the guidelines. But we asked staff if that first floor height could be reduced down to 12 to make it more compatible with the two existing buildings and the rest of the neighborhood. So I think they've agreed to let us lower the level of the first floor to bring it a little bit more in scale to the rest of the street. One thing that's unique about this site, and there are several other examples of this in the historic district, where you have a building that's on a corner lot, and so you basically are dealing with two facades. And so there are other examples. Actually, across the street of B. Matthews is a similar situation where the building that B. Matthews is turns the corner And then as you go down Havisham Street, the facade does change. And so we wanted to take that idea and put it into this building here. We do have entrance here on Bay Street into the lobby area. But as we turn the corner, what we are looking to do is basically break up this facade so it reads more as two buildings using brick. And, you know, as we come back, hopefully for part two, we'll discuss the brick materials, you know, maybe changing a brick color so it breaks up the components. But this is really kind of demonstrating that we want the building to read as two facades. We've also, on the building that faces into the lane, we've dropped the cornice down to the third floor. So it kind of breaks that facade up again as you kind of step into the more historic part of the streets and buildings that are adjacent to this property on along the lane. And then on the fourth floor, we'll look at changing the material. It won't be masonry. We may be looking at the metal panels or something similar that we'll present in part two. And I think looking down the lane, you can see the facades of building B and C will be rebuilt and maintained, and the existing openings will be restored to their original shape. The addition we talked about on building B will be stepped back 4 feet from the existing facade, so that existing facade will read independent of the addition. And then further down, the addition of the new three-story building. And it faces the lane, but there will be no lane access into that building. It'll be tied into the rest of the architecture of building B and C. But again, we've introduced a slope roof with dormer windows on the third level to kind of bring the scale down more of a residential scale. Across the lane, there are several carriage houses, but they are not historic. They're all new construction over a period of time. And again, this is just a first floor plan. You can see that we have the lobby area on Bay, East Bay and Havisham, back of house area. And then you go into the building B, which will be a restaurant facing East Bay Street, which is open to the public. And then obviously kitchen and back of house behind that. The other item that I think is worth mentioning is there will be an internal trash room that will be ventilated. So there will be no trash containers in the lane. And then those will just be moved out for pickup on whatever day the trash is picked up. So the lane will be maintained in, you know, more pleasant condition. And then building C, again, is more meeting rooms to the front and offices to the rear. Again, if y'all are interested, I don't think you want to get into the floor plans, but we have those here to talk about. So we've reached out to the neighborhood, all the people that back up to the property, and some have we've talked to, some did not respond to us. We've met with Historic Savannah, and I think they will speak in favor of the project. So I think we've done our due diligence in making sure that everyone's aware of what we are proposing to do and the requests we're asking from this board today. So if I ask any questions, I'll be happy to.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Are there questions for the applicant?
Mr. Hull. One. I like this design.
Thank you.
But I did have one question, and that is really not relevant to what we're talking about, but I did want to ask it. Being that this was a former cleaner's place, is there any brownfields issues that might come up on this?
We have done some testing, and we have not run into anything. You know, originally, there were some use, but as Best Cleaners kind of evolved, it was mainly a drop-off and pickup area. They really did not do any work there, probably, you know, years and years. So, but yes, we will have tested, and we'll continue to make sure that's not an issue.
Additional questions?
I just have one. Can you talk a little bit about how the new part of Building B will probably be tied together and any loss of historic materials?
Well, as I mentioned, let me go back up, stroll back up here. Building B is basically, we're leaving it intact, as Ellen talked about. The facade will be restored. The roof structure will be restored in the original condition. And yes, there will be a two-story addition to the rear, but we will maintain the existing roof structure of the building. So as it's red on the ground floor, it will be maintained in its present look. The facade, what we tried to do is step that two-story addition far enough back where it really is not visible. We are looking to go back a little further. As you can see, we're going to introduce a more lighter facade treatment along here with some glass so it reads, you know, somewhat transparent and kind of blends back into the background of the existing building.
So just to clarify, so the roof structure will not be removed?
No, it will not.
And the side supporting structure will not be removed?
No, all the buildings, both B and C, will be left intact as far as the existing perimeter walls and the roof structure.
Any additional questions? Thank you, Mr. Hansen.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
No worries. Is there a member of the public that would like to comment on this application?
Me again. Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC appreciates that the architect and development team met with HSF staff and also again presented to our ARC committee. We are in full support of this project as it's being proposed. The proposed rehabilitation and design of new construction is visually compatible. We appreciate numerous aspects of the design, including the height, careful detail to retain historic features, and variation in building masses, materials, and details.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak?
My name's Graham Sadler, and I live at 404 East Bryan Street, which is the property adjacent to this new construction across Bay Lane. And I've been there for 30 years, and I'm thrilled to be able to come up and speak in support of the project. I think this the new construction four-story is excellent. It's going to be a really nice addition to have a strong building on that corner. The fact that it's divided into looks like two buildings, I think, really mitigates the scale. We've been very concerned over a number of years about the integrity of the historic structure. The back wall is in horrible shape. The fact that it will be salvaged and obviously, you know, the addition is very sensitive, but to put that back will in prime condition, presumably without the tree that's growing in it right now, will be a real plus. So I think it's going to be a super addition to the neighborhood, and I'd like to encourage your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sadler. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? Just state your name for the record.
My name is Steve Edwards, and I represent the Downtown Neighborhood Association. We only would like to express our thanks as well for having been given the opportunity to review the project, and we're fully in support of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Is there anyone else? Anyone online? Would the petitioner like to respond to glowing public comment?
Well, I must say it's very pleasing to come up and everyone is speaking positive. Believe me, I've been here before for many years where we haven't had that kind of endorsement, but we look forward to hopefully getting this approved and then moving into part two design. Thank you.
Just don't tell Patrick. He'll think he can go on vacation all the time.
I'm going to tell him it took us 3 hours to get through this meeting today.
We appreciate your patience. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. Mr. Thompson, I will start with you.
Looks like a great project, highly sensitive to the historic character of the area. It'll be an asset to Bay Street there. So I support staff's recommendation.
Mr. Hull.
Support the staff's recommendation and look forward to part two.
Mr. Higgins.
I echo that.
Ms. Nagel.
I would support approval. I think it's nice to see people who live right there, people who live nearby. The architect himself has lived there for so many years. It's great to see how it matters to people who actually that are building it, who actually live downtown. So it's nice to see that.
All right. I'm not going to go around a second time since they all seem to be in support, and I will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board review approve the petition 240044416 COA at 401-409 East Bay Street as requested because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Hull. The motion on the floor is to approve as presented. Do I have a second?
Nagel, second.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Thompson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Hull?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That petition is approved. We will move on to item number 14, the petition of Trailer Park Hitch, file number 24-004018, 300 Drayton Street, an illuminated sign.
So this is the first again of three signs about to discuss. The applicant is requesting after-fact approval for an illuminated window sign. In this case, staff did look at making an incidental sign, but unfortunately in this area, incidental signs can only be about 1.5 square feet. The sign that's seen is about 3 square feet. So it is considered a wall sign in this case. While it meets the majority of the standards for wall signs, again, wall signs cannot be illuminated. So in this case, this the sign does not meet the standards for illumination. So with that, staff recommends that the board deny the after-the-fact approval for illuminated sign 300 Drayton Street.
Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions for staff?
Yeah. This might sound super stupid, but if they don't turn it on, then it would be fine.
I've never had that question before, so I am not sure.
Okay.
That's it.
I mean, okay, thank you.
Wall signs, what's the square footage of wall signs are about?
10% of the total window area. And this is far below the 10%, yeah.
So, yes.
Madam Chair.
Sure.
I didn't quite follow that. So if the sign's not turned on, it would be okay? Is that what I heard or okay?
It would be non-illuminated. Are there additional questions for staff? Is the petitioner here?
You online?
What's the name again?
Trey Wilder.
No.
Okay. Yeah, it's a long one. Is there a member of the public that wishes to speak? Okay. Well, at this time, we will enter into board discussion. Ms. Nagel, I'll start with you.
I have a question. Is this a complaint received from a neighbor or a person nearby, or is it just code compliance?
We were notified by code compliance. I don't know how.
You don't know how. Okay. I wonder. It would make a difference if it bothered people whether it was not lit, and that's all.
Mr. Higgins.
I agree with staff comments, but I do look forward to some further clarification on signage issues from staff?
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Houle?
As we were so excited.
Will you turn your mic on?
As we were so excited to get the report on curb cuts, I too am excited that we will be hearing about signs. Otherwise, I agree with the staff's recommendation.
Mr. Thompson.
Yeah, I agree with staff's recommendation. But I think I do understand the message with cocktails and dreams.
Yeah, and just to put it on public record, the comments of this board and the desire to get clarification or at least an understanding from city staff, you know, we tend to get one or two, sometimes three, today four of these sign requests, and it puts applicants and I think business owners in a tough spot when they look across the street or to their neighbors next door and they see, you know, people getting away with the same thing that they're being called forward and asked to appear before us on. So just some clarification on the existing sign ordinance and the enforcement process. And maybe, you know, a suggestion from me would be to reach out to the business organizations, maybe the Downtown Business Association and the Waterfront Association, to remind people about the sign ordinance and then what the city's plan is moving forward to enforce it, so that they understand, you know, we're going to start doing a sweep through the city. So here is an explanation of the sign ordinance for your special sign district. I just think some clarification and some uniformity would go a long way. I'll go back around again, Ms. Nagel.
No comment.
Mr. Higgins.
No comment.
Mr. Houle?
No comment.
Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
All right. At this time, I'll entertain a motion.
Higgins, with regard to petition 24-004018, 300 Drayton Street, I move the Savannah Historic Board of Review deny the after-the-fact approval of an illuminated sign at 300 Drayton Street because the sign does not meet the standards for illumination.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. The motion on the floor is to deny the petition. Do I have a second?
Houle, second.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. Ms. Nagel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ayes have it. That petition is denied. Next up on the regular agenda is item number 15, the petition of James Burnsed, file number 24-004391 for 116 Whitaker Street, another illuminated sign.
But this one's for a projecting illuminated sign, not co-compliance related, so this is a new application. Staff found that the sign met all the requirements for a projecting sign and for illumination. It is worth noting that staff did reach out to the applicant about this project because it is across the street from a two-story building. There is a part of the ordinance that says illuminated signs can't be across the street from residential properties. The first story of that building is all restaurants. Second story is law offices, from what we've been told. So this sign can't be illuminated in this case. So with that, staff does recommend approval of the proposed illuminated sign at 116 Whitaker as requested. And in this case, the applicant is online. So.
Great. Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions for staff on this one? Okay. Since we do have the applicant joining us virtually, is there anything that you wish to add to the application?
Yeah, go ahead, please. Did we hear him?
Okay.
You're unmuted, sir. You can go ahead.
Well, while we're figuring out our technology, are there any questions for the applicant that need to be answered?
It's not really for the applicant, but I'm trying to place what's across the street from this. El Rocco, don't they have an illuminated neon sign? So if there's a residential place nearby, how do they have it? And then these people can't.
Hey, my mic. Is my mic unmuted now?
Yes. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. I'm here. I'm James Merced. Thank you all for being patient with me.
Are there any questions for the applicant? All right. Thank you, Mr. Bernstein. I don't think we have any questions for you.
Okay. And I just wanted to note that it's not a lighted sign like everybody thinks, a bright sign. We leave in the whole sign opaque. The only thing that lights up is the center parts of the letters to represent the old style neon like the historic always had. So it would be very, very low lighted. It would be less lighted than a floodlight shining down on the sign. We're just trying to represent the old style signs like that used to be downtown all the time.
Okay, thank you, sir. Is there a member of the public that wishes to speak on this? Okay. At this time, we'll enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. Mr. Thompson, I'll start with you.
No comment.
Mr. Houle?
No comment.
Mr. Higgins?
No comment.
Ms. Nagel?
No comment.
All right. Since there were no comments first time, I won't go around again. I'll now entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition 2400-4391 COA at 116 Whitaker Street as requested because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. The motion on the floor is to approve. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins, for the second. Thompson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That petition is approved. Next up on the regular agenda is item number 16, petition of House of Strutt, file number 24-000-3364 for 20 West State Street, another illuminated sign.
That's the final one for the day. So this is, again, an illuminated sign. This is also a code compliance issue. The sign that we're talking about is this vintage sign, like with the 300 Drayton, which staff tried to make this a incidental sign. Unfortunately, in this district, incidental signs are capped about 4 square feet. If I remember right, this one's closer to 11 square feet. So, again, it is now a wall sign. Wall signs cannot be illuminated in any district. So while it overall meets the guidelines for window signs, cannot be approved because window signs cannot be illuminated. So with that, staff does recommend denial of the after fact approval for the illuminated sign in this case.
Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions for staff?
Excuse me just a second. Maybe I've got this screwed up, but I see on here it's approval on the note on the maybe I'm looking at something old.
Yeah, mine says approved denied, so you may be looking at the wrong one.
Pardon me.
Are there any questions for staff? Okay, would the petitioner like to come forward? Just state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Erica Natirboff. I'm the owner of House of Strutt. I actually appreciate what the MPC does. I sell historic vintage fashion, which I source quite a bit of my products from local Savannah people, and it's an honor to highlight the rich history of the city as well as its citizens and their style through my business. When I moved in and signed my triple net lease at 20 West State Street, in the transom said the word antique. So when I moved in, I was super excited to change that from antique to vintage, since that's what I was selling, and to highlight the transom that was original to the building. So I apologize for an after the fact situation. I was unaware that I was doing something that was not approved. I do want to make a few points of clarification for some inconsistencies in the report by the staff. It's actually real neon tubing, not LED as mentioned. I located a craftsman in the area that works in neon and found him and had him create the lettering for me. So it's not an LED sign bought off Amazon. It's also pink, not red. So it's not as saturated color as mentioned in the report. It's a non-permanent application. The transom is translucent. It's not a clear glass. And in no way have I altered the historical integrity of the building by placing vintage in the window. I wanted to make a couple of just points on standard two where it mentioned historic character. The historical architectural elements are intact, but they're not only intact, they're highlighted by the vintage in the transom. We get to look up 8 feet and see vintage placed in such a lovely transom. Let's see. It mentioned like physical record that there was a false sense of historical development that goes against my business and what I am. I want to accurately portray the history of Savannah, and there is no false sense of historical development mentioned. Also mentioned about distinctive features. I agree. It's important to preserve and maintain the distinctive features, but there hasn't been anything altered. So I'm confused on what the staff is trying to convey, as well as deterioration features. Does that mean you think that I'm deteriorating the front of the building by placing the lettering? Like aesthetically, am I deteriorating the building? Like how is it impacting the physicality of the building? I'm just a little curious. And then also, with this particular neon, if anything, I thought it would be a better solution than applying for an exterior projecting perpendicular exterior sign that's going to be bolted to the brick of the building. These letters are placed inside the window of the transom. So I just thought aesthetically it would be more pleasing. When you're walking down State Street from Bull heading west, unfortunately, the architectural elements of my building is being blocked by the Savannah Smokehouse sign. So even if you wanted to see the architectural elements, you would have to face it. You wouldn't see it walking down the street. And a neon lettering is a significant way for me to attract customers to my business. And it also like maintains and highlights the original historic integrity of the building. And not having the sign would cause considerable hardship for my business. So I just ask that you reconsider the classification of the neon tubing lettering. And I would like to, may I show you a picture that I didn't include? May I share this with the staff?
Sure.
Or the board? On this paper just has the original, I guess a point I wanted to make was the integrity of the building was changed when the board approved removal of the bricks underneath the original window. That to me is historical integrity. So that was approved sometime after 2008. And then while I was waiting for hours, I was able to locate an image that says where I had recognized that it said antique. Can you see this? Okay. So this, where it says antique, the building on the left, that's obviously my building. And when I moved in, it said antique. So I wanted to highlight that because I just thought that it would be okay that I switched the lettering out to reflect what my business does. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Are there questions for the applicant? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, I just wanted to, first of all, thank the applicant for attending and for her comments, but just to note, in terms of our staff report, when we talk about the Secretary of Interior Standards, we note that it will be located within an existing window, will not require the removal of any historic materials, will not negatively impact the historic character of the building. So I don't want you to think that we were saying that your sign is some terrible thing that's going to negatively impact the historic fabric. Unfortunately, and this you may have heard, this is part of a larger discussion, it's simply not allowed. So we commiserate with you, but under the existing ordinances, we can't approve this sign. So this is part of a broader discussion that we need to talk about with you all, with the city of Savannah, about signage. But again, the staff was not saying at all that your sign is unattractive or is having a negative impact on historic fabric.
Thank you, Jonathan. Is there a member of the public that wishes to speak?
Last time today.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. I'm going to echo some things that Erica already said, so I apologize for repeating. Our ARC understands that this sign doesn't meet the current ordinance. However, they wanted me to address that it is of their opinion that this sign should be allowed to remain. It highlights the historic transom windows and causes no detriment with perforation or maintenance issues to the exterior facade as the letters are located on the interior. Considering more signs are starting to come to the board through code of compliance or what have you, we think a careful review of the sign ordinance needs to take place, and we've already expressed that concern to our new city preservationist. So just know that we've already initiated that conversation.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? Okay. I had a question just before we go into board discussion. As brought up earlier, if the signs stay in the window but are not illuminated, would that be permissible under the, would that meet the standard of the current ordinance?
I mean, I believe that's the case. I'm trying to look up the sign. I did not study up on the sign.
Yeah.
Signs are not my favorite thing.
If the reason
it's being denied is because it's illuminated and not because of size, then yes, I think if it's just turned off, then it's no longer illuminated. I mean, legally it's not. So yes, it could remain as long as it doesn't turn on. I think that if, right, that's the illumination part that we're looking at. It's not size. Size has become, makes it a different matter in that case. So my answer is yes, it would be allowed if it wasn't turned on.
Okay.
Question. Can I ask a question of staff?
Sure.
So theoretically, if it was not turned on and if it remained, would it meet the standards with the other window signage that's on that building?
I believe it meets every other standard, but the illumination situation.
Okay, thank you. At this time, we will enter into board discussion. Ms. Nagel, I'll start with you.
This is one of those really tough ones because it goes with the business. It doesn't have a residential person across the street. It doesn't really, but because the ordinance is such, and then it would create a problem with other people getting denied their illuminated signs. You can only imagine that would be a snowball. You know, I support following what the ordinances say, and I recommend just turning it off and leaving it. It's great, but it would need to be turned off. And then we as a city need to honestly sit down and revise what would be permissible, it isn't. But at the current moment, I would say it needs to be turned off to fit the ordinance. Later down the road, if we fix it as a city, which I think we need to, you could turn it back on. Petition to turn it back on, you know, but for now, I think we have no choice but to follow the ordinance as is.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Higgins?
I totally agree. This is one of those where, you know, I want to say yes, but unfortunately, the standards are just kind of black and white. But this just screams for more clarification, which we've said time and time again.
Mr. Hull.
I agree with everything that's been said so far.
Mr. Thompson.
Well, I want to say that I had the same question as Mr. Higgins about does it qualify on looking at all the standards. And I find it interesting that there's just the same number of spaces to put the word that you want to put in there. I guess you could also externally illuminate it with a light. Yeah, okay. That's all I had to say.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. I'll go around one more time. Ms. Nagel.
No further comment.
Mr. Higgins.
No comment.
Mr. Hull.
No comment.
Mr. Thompson.
No further comment.
Okay. At this time, I will entertain a motion. Just turn your mic on, Mr. Hull.
All the time. Regretfully, I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review deny the petition 2400-3364 COA at 20 West State Street because the sign does not meet the standards for illumination.
Thank you, Mr. Hull. The motion on the floor is to deny. Do I have a second?
Can I just, I don't know if it fits in here, but would there be an amendment where it's denied as an illuminated sign, but not as a sign that can stay non-illuminated? Or does she need to take it down entirely?
I think it would just be staff would have to clarify that with
code. Yeah, I know it's a good question, but for now we would not. I mean, okay. Again, we're not objecting to the sign, but we just because of how things are currently written, our hands are a bit tied. Illuminated sign. Just turn it off for now.
Okay. So the motion on the floor from Mr. Hull is to deny the application for an illuminated sign. Do I have a second?
Probably second.
I have a second from Mr. Higgins. Mr. Thompson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Hull?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
That petition is denied. All right. Moving through the agenda, a list of staff reviews has been attached. I will entertain a combination of the staff reviews and entertain a motion.
I would just note there was a neighbor who had a question about one of the staff reviews, but I don't know how we've never had anybody question one of the staff reviews. So not sure. It's the first one I can just quickly. It's 202 East Gwinnett Street.
Sure.
It's just a window. This is a accessory building that's, my understanding, is not built yet. that you all approved. They're changing one of the windows that fronts onto the courtyard to an accent window. It meets the standards. It's wood. The neighbor who's here does not feel it's visually compatible. But I don't know how we...
Yeah, I don't know what the procedure is for that.
I mean, basically...
We normally allow public comment on staff review.
Yeah. I mean, basically, if you're fine with the staff analysis, then you can approve all the staff reviews. It's up to you.
I think unless there's an objection from a board member.
This is the pink house, correct?
Yes, the pink house. There's a non-contributing garage that's going to be removed, and then there's going to be a new carriage house that Kristen Sotiel designed, and not facing the lane, but facing into the side yard. That house has a big side yard. There's a window that they just changed the design of one of the windows, and so that's the scope of work. I mean, it meets all the standards, so we have no way to.
I'm just trying to, because that carriage house is very ornate. So staff was comfortable that it did not increase the
yes.
ornateness?
Yes, we discussed it as a staff. An accent window.
What would be the, I've just never had anything be pulled off.
Neither have I.
And it's a vote of acknowledgement. So it's, I'm not sure what the procedure would be to further review, and it doesn't allow for public comment.
Yeah, it doesn't really. I just wanted to bring it to your attention.
How does something that is visible from the street, such as a window change, not be heard as anything else?
Well, we approve lots of items. By
the board would say one
we would have I mean, you rely on staff to use our judgment on not bringing to you every little thing. If people No, I'm just saying, yes, no, it's a good question. Windows, doors, roofs, fences have to come to you. But there are many things that we can approve, not just me, but staff, on the staff level. We reviewed it. It met the standards, material, design. I think you're all familiar with the architect. We don't show favoritism to one architect or the other, but this is an architect who does, I think, most people would acknowledge very good, high quality design. We discussed it with him. We felt it met all the standards. And so that's why it was a staff review. But you can see here,
don't know procedurally how to deal with it.
Yeah. I don't believe there's a mechanism whereby, I mean, I guess if you all strongly objected.
We can't go back on the regular agenda and we can't really hear it.
Right. And we've already, yes.
Yeah.
Right. So. Right. It falls within the purview of staff. I would say I think there may be one on here that should not have been put here, just as a correction. 23 East 38th Street is not within the downtown historic district. So if you could just note that you're not approving that number 21, that should be on the HPC's. All right. But all the others are within your purview.
Gotcha.
May I?
Sure.
So if you're working on an item, a review that has been submitted, and you get public comment because somebody knows about it, they're in your office and they're saying we don't agree, what do you do with that at that point?
So we normally don't get, people submit, we get applications all the time for staff reviews, for my roof is leaking, I need to replace my roof. We try to help, obviously, applicants get their permits as quickly as possible, as long as they meet the standards.
I'm not questioning the staff review of that. I
honestly can't.
Well, let me just state what I think. Yeah. If you get a public comment in the office against something, that probably should be agenda. Okay. And I'm not questioning at all what you're looking at in approving a staff at this point. I think it's, none of you have been here and sat through meetings that lasted till 8 and 9 o'clock at night because everything had to be put on the agenda. So this was a tool we put in the ordinance to focus on the big things and move forward. So I just think that maybe if you don't have any other indication of somebody opposing the thing, it probably should be put on the agenda for the board to decide. That's what I'm trying to say.
It's a good point, Mr. Thompson.
I agree. I mean, at the very least, give it the benefit of the board being able to see it, because I have no idea what window replacement we're talking about. But if there's somebody out there who thinks there's a reason that it would not fit the standards of the ordinance, then maybe it should be something that's put in the regular agenda.
Madam Chair, the only issue with that is the COA's already been issued with these. So you can't go back and take it back. That's the only thing with that. And because they are listed as staff level reviews, that's what staff does. So therefore, the decision is made by staff. And I get what you're saying, Mr. Thompson, because I have been there at 8 o'clock. But at this point, the decision has already been rendered and submitted to the petitioner. That I just want you to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
I think it's an excellent point, Mr. Thompson. And yes, somebody had come to us right when this application was received and had said to us, we have major concerns about it. And we don't approve very much on the staff level. I mean, we're very strict about what we approve. This again is on a, this is not a, this is new construction. This is a brand new building, carriage house. This is not, there's no question about Secretary of the Interior standards or, loss of historic fabric or anything like that. So.
I have another quick question or a quick answer, I think. All these are posted, right, with signs, COAs?
Yes, they have to put up a COA. I don't think they've started construction on the actual carriage house yet. I think that house is still under.
Maybe some clarification from Jessica.
Okay.
And please identify yourself, Jessica. When you go. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Don't hang me free.
Just a note, Caitlin noted, if you look at, it says decisions of the preservation officer, staff decisions may be appealed to the Historic District Board of Review at its next scheduled meeting.
So someone would
there
have
is a
to
mechanism.
Appeal it. Yeah. Okay.
If the applicant wants to appeal it.
That's on the COA?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have to, all I can tell you is what it says. We will have to dig into this more. This is.
I mean, would.
But it's already been approved. That's what we're saying. It's been approved at the staff level and a COA has been issued. So it hasn't been something that this body has.
Jessica Baldwin, yes. City of Savannah. So according to the ordinance, it says that, you know, the review by the planning director, which planning director is defined as planning, preservation officer, planning director, or, historic preservation director. A material change or minor changes to buildings, a new construction of walls, fences, screens, or pavings is allowed under minor review. And there is nothing. Most cities don't even tell people what minor reviews they're putting out there, to be quite honest. So, I think that it's very kind of the staff to let everybody know all the different ones that they do, because I'm sure that they must have hundreds at a time. If an applicant is not happy with something, I think that staff can, or if a public is not happy with something, I think staff can take that in consideration as they move forward for future projects. But I don't think that this is, and as this is noted on the review, we will take a look at how that implies with our code of ordinance, but frankly, the code of ordinance and this do not align. So I would lean towards the code of ordinance over what is on the COA. Thanks.
Thank you, Jessica.
Thanks, Jessica. All right, so to get us through this meeting, we go back to a vote for acknowledgement of the list of staff reviews with the understanding that the public can appeal through the outlined process if they're not happy with any of the decisions made therein.
And we'll provide more clarification at the next meeting on this question. To be honest, it hasn't come up. So,
yeah, a motion and then a second and a vote of acknowledgement.
Madam Chair, I move that the board acknowledged the staff reviews 17 through 20 and 22 through 27.
Thank you. The motion on the floor is to approve 18 through 20 and 22 through 27. Is there a second?
Yeah, sorry, 28.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's correct. Okay. I'll second it.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Oops, sorry. Work performed without a certificate of appropriateness. There were none this week, this month, sorry. Report on items deferred to staff, also none. Notices, proclamations, acknowledgements, none. Other business.
About this during the pre-meeting. It, to save us some time, basically, when somebody comes in, if they need a curb cut, they have to go to the city, get their approval before they come to you.
Yes, and hallelujah, amen. Thank God. Really appreciate that finally getting done. Keeping in other business, it's kind of old business, just to make sure that it's noted in this section, the request for the city to review the sign ordinance and the enforcement of said sign ordinance and take a look at perhaps bringing a stakeholder group together to examine that. Was there anything else that needed to be discussed before we adjourn? All right. I will adjourn.
Thank you for your time.